Hey, what's going on, everybody? Joel Radio. Hi, 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 hi. See, the ghost people didn't get to the Amy Schumer trial last time. That was a complaint I heard.
I got a friend request from a guy that said that he had listened to the whole show.
Okay.
Because listen to every show.
Because there was a guy who said, I wanted to listen to you talk about Amy Schumer, and all I heard was your playlist of awful songs. And I go, I'm sorry about that.
That did drive some people out.
Well, that's why you do a show like this. I don't know. What can I tell you? Stroll Radio, everybody. Welcome back. It's not easy.
No.
It's not easy to do a show for free for people.
Yeah, you
and try to please them.
Send money.
Joel Radio, welcome back. All right, now this is the biggest show of the year, in a sense. You know, when I mean,
Assholes of the Year is really our trademark.
Well, that's the one that we like to do. This is the one that people actually listen to in the most numbers,
okay,
generally
all
speaking.
Right, all right.
Which has been called Movie Mania for the last couple of years, so that's what it's going to be called today. Movie Mania 2016, where we talk about all the best movies of 2015, all the worst movies of 2015, our personal best and worst lists. As well as we're serving also as an Oscar pre-show. Because the Oscars are in a couple weeks. The Oscars are on February 28th on ABC. So we're going to talk about what we think will win the Oscar, what deserves to win the Oscar.
Yeah.
And our best and worst movies
of
the year.
And we'll talk about who's wearing Armani Privé, who's wearing Michael Kors, Dior, Vera Wang, you know, all of the important fashion.
Yes,
pieces.
That will all come out on this show. No, none of that will come
My
out.
Wife watches The Fashion Police.
Well.
And so I end up watching
she's
The Fashion
a woman.
Police. And they have now, it's now NeNe Leakes is on that show, who was a real housewife.
Yeah.
So they got a black woman with like platinum blonde hair. And I'm like, shouldn't you know how to dress yourself?
Well, look,
before you comment on fashion,
if anyone knows about an Oscars red carpet, it's the housewife from Atlanta.
Yeah,
you exactly. know, if anyone's been in more Hollywood blockbusters,
all her years in the film industry,
yeah, all the honors she's received for her great work over the years, she should know.
Remember,
right,
that,
I don't want to get off
time
track.
She bitch slapped a chick.
I don't want to get off track.
All right, okay.
Because I don't want to. Because listen, I'll start playing Dan Fogelberg. We'll never talk about movies.
We'll be talking.
I got.
Yeah, I know. We'll be talking.
I got
about,
Christopher Cross ballads I can play all day, but yeah. We got to do a show, bro.
Yeah, sure.
We're not even going to talk that awful
what about
Super Bowl.
England,
we're not even
talk what about England Dan and John Ford Coley? Can we get into them?
I'll put some of that on.
Yeah,
I got some of
bust
that.
Bust some right. of that out? Okay.
Let's get into this. Our top 15 movies of the year.
Loggins and Messina?
I've got. I told Corey we'll do a 15, our favorite 15. So this is not our best. We're not. The way I make my list, I don't look at like. This movie deserves to be awarded. These were my favorite movies that I watched during the year. That's all I'm saying. So I'm not trying to go like, well, you know, the movie where the guy lights his farts on fire isn't as important as, you know, some Oscar bait fucking thing with,
yeah.
you know, Colin Firth. I'm saying these are my favorite movies. I've said to Corey, you can include documentaries in your top 15. I've included several in my top 15. And so we'll get into that. So... Now, do you want to start with your number 15 movie, or should I?
Okay, well, I mean...
You decide.
And
what's going to happen is we're going to have overlap.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we'll do some extra, some runners-up later, and some other things. Like, I've got a whole list of probably 10 other documentaries that were really good and about 20 other movies. So, what do you want to do?
You know, and I did my list in pretty much the same way.
Yeah.
And there might be some movies on here that, well, they're debatable, but...
Well, that's your personal choice.
I think my personal choice tends to be what I do think are the best movies.
Right. And the other thing I want to say is that I went out and I've done this for a couple of years now on the show, if you've listened to the other ones. I went out and went nuts and watched all of the Oscar-nominated movies. Mm-hmm. Now, when I say all of them, I mean in the major acting categories, the best pictures, and the best documentaries. That covers 90% of it anyway. I didn't watch all the foreign films. I didn't watch all the animated features that are nominated. But I watched all of the movies that have an actor or actress nomination, the best pictures and the documentaries. If you watched all of those, if you wanted to do what I did It's 21 movies.
No, that's
just
that's,
on that, okay?
That's madness.
Now, for me, I also, and that wasn't the only movies I watched as a run-up to the show, because I wanted to watch anything that I thought was good. So starting, I think it was on Christmas I started with this. Mm-hmm. And I just started seeing, well, what was interesting that came out over the year that I hadn't seen, you know, what was streaming, what was on DVD, what was whatever. And it turns out since Christmas, I saw 27 films since Christmas Day.
I've had times when I've seen that many movies in a week.
Yeah. So yeah, 27 movies is what I saw, and that's a fucking lot. That's a fucking lot of movies to watch.
Yeah. When you do the Detroit Film Critics Society, we'll have days where we'll watch like 7 or 8 in a day.
Okay.
I don't recommend that.
No.
I don't recommend ever doing that.
But yeah, so 27, and believe me, and the fact is, and there's also movies like that I wanted to see that I didn't see in order to watch some of the Oscar-nominated movies. Like, there's movies, we'll talk about them, that got, like, one nomination in some wacky category, you know, some supporting actress. And I went out and watched these things, and I don't recommend you do that. But if you wanted to, I'm trying to be a completist for you, the home listener.
All right. I think you've actually seen some movies I did not.
Well, yeah, you're not doing the full-time movie critic thing right now.
I'm doing film groups, which means that I do see a lot of movies, but I don't see everything as I used to do.
Right.
I basically see what I want to see.
Well, that's the best way to do it.
Yeah.
Well, that's the great thing about the show is we're telling people what they should see if they didn't see something. So do you want to start or should I? Come on, let's go.
I'll start it
off. Rock and roll. Corey Hall.
Number 15.
Number 15 for Corey Hall.
What We Do in the Shadows.
Number 15 is What We Do in the Shadows. That's a good pick. Go ahead.
From director Taika Waititi.
Yes.
Who is a New Zealander, a Kiwi. And this is Jermaine Clement's. Jermaine, weird names.
Jermaine Clement.
Yes, it's those guys. It's
basically the guys who made Flight of the Conchords.
Yeah,
which, Brett's not there.
Brett's
but
not
the
in
other
there,
guys.
Rhys Darby's in there.
Yeah, the other guys.
And it's like a vampire mockumentary.
Mm-hmm.
And yet sometimes they get really violent. it's kind of a weird, wacky movie that's got a very bizarre tone. It's like a house full of vampires. And they're all kind of dysfunctional weirdos, and they live in a house together, and they have a rivalry with a gang of werewolves who are all guys in, like, you know, like North Peak jackets running around. And it's silly, satirical fun, but...
Yeah, it was really funny. I
enjoyed it.
I have it higher than you. It's in my top 15. It's my number 7 movie of the year.
One of the only real... straight up comedies.
Yeah, I believe it's my best comedy of the year, really. Yeah, it is the best comedy that I had on my list. So, and it's this movie came out in 2014, I think, in New Zealand, but it came out here
that
in the States.
That doesn't count.
Yeah, that doesn't count. Yeah, I saw this.
That shit runs counterclockwise. We don't care.
I saw this in the theater back in January, February last year, and it was great. So funny. You know, you think that this might be like a scary movie, you know, like a Wayans Brothers scary movie, if you know what I mean, or it's going to be like a Twilight parody, and it's not that at all.
No, it's not.
It's really its own thing and
own unique weird.
And
vibe.
It's take really more on like sort of the Dracula story, like the old vampires rather than new hunky shirtless vampires. You know what I mean? It's more a take on that. It's really funny. Jermaine's so great in this. And, you know, Taika Waititi isn't in usually his movies. He doesn't usually act.
No.
But he's the other lead in this. And it's really, I mean, it's an ensemble, but he's one of the lead guys in there, too.
There's like a Nosferatu guy.
Yeah.
They're all various different kinds
of
vampires.
It's really great. It's
Jermaine was like from the, you know, whenever they were bit. So Jermaine's like a 1870s kind of guy. And, you know, and they're very pretentious and snotty assholes. Who happen to be vampires. So
anyway. It's really great. I thought this was on Netflix, but I looked for it the other day. You know, when I was making my list, I was saying, you know, where can people see all these? I think you got to rent this now. I think you either got to digitally rent it or get it on DVD or
something.
That's
why I don't trust Netflix.
And yeah, it disappeared. I think it was on there.
I get the Blu-ray if I really like it.
Yeah. Yeah, What We Do in the Shadows is great. It's one of the, probably the best comedy, according to me. I have some other comedies on my list that down much lower. Actually, they're not even on my top 15. They're on my other list. But anyway. All right. Great pick, though. I loved it. Here's my number 15 movie. This is a little movie. This is a little indie thing maybe you've heard of called Bridge of Spies.
Okay.
Directed by Steven Spielberg and starring Tom Hanks. Now, the reason I picked Bridge of Spies. Now, Bridge of Spies, you see it and you go, well, that's, there's your Oscar movie. There it is right there. Historical story, which, by the way, how many historical movies are, like, Oscar nominated this year? Like 700, right?
Well,
like, it's just so many.
Look, as they said in the fine film Tropic Thunder,
yeah,
there's certain things you do to get an Oscar.
Now,
and making movies, you know, about this is set in the 50s in the Cold War,
yeah.
But yeah, those are early 60s. So that, you know,
yeah, it's great though. Tom Hanks does a nice job. Mark Rylance as the spy that gets busted in America is really great in this. And but the reason I put this in my top 50, because really as a spy thriller, there's been better spy thrillers just based on the plot and the tension. It's really more of a historical movie than it is like a thriller. But here's what pushed this movie over the top for me. The design of this, the way that they captured that era on film, and you know, even not just like New York in the 50s, which looked amazing. The whole opening sequence is like on the New York subway in the 50s, and there's like detail that like no one would ever make that look as real as they did in this movie. No one would ever go out of their way for that much detail. It's just amazing. And then the way they did, you know, Berlin and, you know, right. Checkpoint Charlie and the wall and all that stuff. It's just amazing. There's really no, it's just maybe the best looking movie of the year.
And they've got, you know, East Germany and West Germany, and there's stark differences.
And
there's
you see Russians in here, and there's all kinds of really great historical stuff, great detail, great design, great cinematography. It was just beautiful. It was really, somebody described this. I read an article that said they described Bridge of Spies as like a movie you'd go watch with your dad. And I completely agree with that. And it was a little dry, but boy, it was good.
Now, I think what some people don't realize about this movie is that the Coen brothers did the rewrite on the screenplay.
Yeah, they're credited as the co-writers. And
Which is interesting.
It doesn't feel like a Coen brothers movie ever.
It doesn't,
but
except for some of the dialogue is really good.
Yeah.
And it feels like, okay, so there's like Tom Hanks gives a speech about he's a lawyer, but he mostly handles insurance. Mm-hmm. He's an insurance lawyer. And he basically has this speech about what the value of insurance really is, or why you need to have a policy, and what insurance is there to do. And then that gets completely mirrored later when he's talking to the Russians about why they have to agree to terms.
Yeah, it's
so that like felt like a real Coen-y sort of thing.
Yeah, I know. I see what you're saying.
Some of the speeches in it were very sharp and very smart. And
the Coen brothers are really the only guys who would also make a period movie with that much detail as well.
Yes.
They would do it just like Spielberg.
Well,
did,
that's also the period that they seem to really love as their new movie, which is not on the 2015 list, is set in the mid-50s and is very period specific. Okay. So,
yeah, Bridge of Spies, it's a beautiful movie. And
this Spielberg kid, he could have a future.
He could be something. So I really like Bridge of Spies. It's nominated for Best Picture, and I have a DVD. The release date. Well, on
it's
DVD.
Kind of a celebration of all things boring. It's like it's really like a salute to the middle aged white male. It's kind of like it's really like Spielberg going, remember our dads? They were grown ups, and they put on suits and they went to work. And they smoked pipes.
This is coming out soon on DVD. I had the date, and then for some reason it.
It really is kind of a cheer, clap, clap for the old wasp.
Yeah, for the good.
You know what I mean?
The good guys win. Yeah.
Tom Hanks is just a boring
USA,
white guy that likes, you know, oatmeal in the morning.
Yeah, it comes out soon on DVD, so you don't need to run to the theater to this. It'll be out soon. It's nominated for Best
Picture. It's solidly
Picture.
Crafted a movie, as you're going to see. And that was my number 13 pick.
And Mark Rylance is in there as well. So, okay, your 13 was that. Well, give me a 14 then, will you?
All right. My number 14. Ant-Man.
Oh.
Which I thought was really a lot of fun. Based on a character that really nobody cares about, even comic book guys.
I wouldn't know, but I'll take your word for it.
Well, you know, Ant-Man's a guy that's been around.
Yeah.
He's kind of the, who would be the comedy equivalent of him? He's kind of like, he's kind of the Jake Johansson of comedy. In that he's been around for a long time.
Oh.
Respectable, but nobody's like a huge Jake Johansson fan.
Right.
I'm sure the Jake Johansson fans are going to go.
Oh, I'm sure.
Do you know what I mean, though? Like a Paul Prevenza. You know what I mean? Like a guy that's around and, you know, he's one of the fellow superheroes, but he's Ant-Man and he's never going to quite get the respect because his power is shrinking.
Yeah.
which is not something men fantasize about.
A utility infielder? Is that what you call Ant-Man?
Yes, he is. He is a utility infielder.
Johnny Walkenfuss?
John Walkenfuss.
Yeah, there
he
is.
He's
it's an old Tigers reference if you didn't get it.
No, he's a bench player. He really is. He's a solid, he's your Adrian Dantley. He comes in.
Couple points off the bench.
Adrian Dantley was pretty good. Anyway, but
the sixth man, is that what they
the sixth man? Be? That's what he is. Anyway, I thought Ant-Man was really well done and pretty entertaining. Obviously, Paul Rudd makes just about everything better. He's always appealing and likable, and I kind of hate the bastard for that. But I thought they did a good job. I thought Michael Douglas was really good in this.
Yeah, he was pretty good in it. Yeah.
Peyton Reed was the director.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know,
he was, and he did Bring It On.
Yes,
he was not really known for big summer blockbusters, but it was good.
Well,
yeah,
this had been intended for Edgar Wright.
Oh, okay.
And Edgar Wright developed it and did most of the work on
it.
And then he had a kind of a fight with Marvel because I think Marvel wanted to shoehorn in some of the cameos that are in it and some of the bigger storyline. And I don't think Edgar Wright wanted
to. So they wanted to tie it into the rest of Marvel.
Which
and Edgar
they,
Wright
yeah,
is
they
like,
do. There's some cameos.
Oh,
no,
they
and
do.
So,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
And, but I thought all of that worked really well. And yeah.
Ant-Man was pretty good. It's
Bring
not
it
on,
Yes Man.
Yeah.
The breakup. But I thought for a popcorn picture, it was pretty entertaining.
Yeah, I have a list of like blockbusters that I liked that aren't in my top 15, and I put Ant-Man on there. It was all right.
There you go.
It was fun. I saw it in 3D. It was fun. So, all right, let me give you a 14. Now, you recommended this to me, and it took me forever to see it, but I was able to watch it the other day, and I loved it. And it was Trumbo with Bryan Cranston
there
as Dalton Trumbo. He's nominated for Best Actor. And here's the thing about Trumbo. I knew the story of the Hollywood Blacklist, the Hollywood 10. I knew all that stuff. And I was kind of like, well, this is just going to tell me what I already know. And it did, but here's what's great about Trumbo. They do all these, they show you, they have an actor playing John Wayne.
Yeah.
They have an actor playing Edward G. Robinson.
It's a guy from JAG.
Yeah, yeah, playing John Wayne. And he's great. And what's
his
name?
David
I forget
Elliot?
That guy's name, but he's great. He plays a big, John Wayne is a complete Republican asshole.
They did not make John Wayne look good.
No, John Wayne looks like an idiot. Edward G. Robinson looks two-faced in this.
Yeah.
He comes off bad. That's, what's the actor's name?
See, guy I from have A Serious Man.
Yeah, it's Michael Stuhlbarg. He's also in Steve Stuhlbarg. Jobs.
Yeah,
he was on Boardwalk Empire, too. He's a real good actor. And David James Elliott played John
now,
Wayne.
Now, the guy who plays...
And Helen Mirren is Hedda Hopper.
Yeah, that
and
was
she's
good.
Great.
That
so the
good.
Whole thing's really well done. It's not as, like...
The guy who played Kirk Douglas.
Yes, that guy's good.
Looks fantastic.
Yeah, he really looks like young Kirk Douglas.
Well, that is a problem for a lot of these movies.
Absolutely.
In that they'll go... They'll have somebody playing a famous actor. There's Clark Gable, and it doesn't look anything like
that. Not
him.
At all, yeah.
The guy who played Kirk Douglas in this, you didn't have to know... You didn't have to question who he was playing.
Like, he walked on, and you went like, that's
oh, it's Kirk
Douglas.
Douglas.
Yeah,
right.
yeah.
There was no...
The guy playing John Wayne, you needed a little convincing that was John Wayne and the way he talked and stuff, and everyone called him Duke. Yeah. But the guy playing Kirk Douglas was exactly Kirk Douglas. And, Louis C.K. has a serious role in this and is pretty good. So the whole thing's good. And it's directed by Jay Roach, who isn't known.
No, Jay Roach is known for
not
comedies.
Known for these kind of movies.
I think he's trying to say he's done a couple of HBO pictures.
Yeah.
He did the one on Sarah Palin and John McCain.
Yeah.
That
was Game Change.
Game Change.
And he also did Recount.
And Recount.
About the
so
Florida
So he's done a couple
election.
Political comedy HBO things that are edging him towards a more serious topic. But,
I really like Trumbo. Again, it's more fun than you think because it kind of sounds like one of those movies like they'd wheel in the AV cart in school and they'd make you watch this important historical movie. And it's way, way, way more fun than that. It was really good. So,
I just missed my list. It's on my runners up.
Okay, yeah.
But I thought the actors were better than the movie.
Yeah.
But the actors are so good. You've got such a great cast. That Jay Roach looks like it looks like TV. I thought
a little
that,
bit. I thought that didn't bother me.
The direction was a little flat to keep it off my
list. That didn't bother
my
me.
List,
well,
but I liked it.
It's not as beautiful as like Bridge of Spies,
right.
I mean, it's a little. It's a lot more fun than that. So.
Dean O'Gorman plays Kirk Douglas,
yeah,
and the guy looks
good.
Exactly like him.
Like that guy.
But it was funny, and that's a good flick.
All right. Well, you gave me a 13 already. That was your. That was Bridge of Spies for you. So I'm going to give you my 13, if that's okay. And I picked a documentary. I think we talked about it on the show not too long ago, so I'm not going to belabor the point. I don't know if you took a chance to see this, but I Am Big Bird, the Carol Spinney story, is my number 13 movie of the year because I talk about this is the guy who played Big Bird on Sesame Street.
Yeah.
He's in his 80s now, and he still continues to be Big Bird. And it's really a great story because not only is it the behind the scenes of Sesame Street and the Muppets and all that stuff, yeah, which you get because he was one of the original guys. He also does Oscar the Grouch, and you see his whole story, and you know. But it's really like the guy is an eccentric, but in a good way.
Yeah.
And he's so into Big Bird, you actually cry. Like I cried during this fucking documentary. I don't know why you think.
Ladies and gentlemen, Joel has feelings.
I had feelings.
News at 11.
I have lots of feelings. I don't know if I always cry, but this movie made me cry. It was really emotional. I mean, his connection to that character and his devotion to Big Bird is pretty amazing. You know, you don't see that from a lot of people, and when you see what it takes to like physically do the Big Bird character, yeah, with his hand up in the mouth and right, wires and all kinds of shit, it's like tough to do, and he's really into it, and boy, it's amazing. So check out I Am Big Bird, Carol Spinney Story.
Yeah.
I believe it's still available on Amazon Prime if you have that, so you can.
All right, you know,
if you have that
I
service,
have not
you
seen
get it,
that.
You got to see it though; it's great.
But I have, I am a big Muppet guy. So I've read Street Gang, I've read the Jim Henson biography, yeah, so I'm pretty familiar with the whole topic. And the original crew of Muppeteers that worked with Henson were all pretty amazing,
right? Yeah, and those guys are all in it. You know, there's yeah, archival footage of Henson.
Those who are left,
and Frank Oz is in it, and it's really good. So check that out if you have Amazon Prime. Why not? It's free.
I will go watch that.
You can watch that with the like.
Now, do they show how the Oscar was orange when he started? And
I think they do.
They had it rigged up. Now this is interesting. They had most Muppets. The puppeteers are right-handed.
Yes.
And you work it with your right hand, and then you work the hands,
yes,
with the left hand. Well, they rigged up the trash can wrong originally,
yeah,
so he had to work Oscar from the left side, and it was all screwed up and uncomfortable. And then they had to rebuild the puppet. And
yeah, it's really cool. It's a really great behind the scenes thing, as well just a great emotional story about a guy.
Well, and that whole story about the beginning of Sesame Street is really
interesting.
It's
all in there. Yeah. You'll like it. So I Am Big Bird. That's my number 13 movie. Corey, give us a number 12. If
a
you will.
Number 12 would be Inside Out from Pixar.
Oh boy, here we go.
Now you're
waiting for the first fight on this show.
Well,
mark your calendar.
I'll tell you what.
Go ahead. Tell me about Inside Out.
The shit got me. I'm not going to. I'm not going to lie to you. You said you cried. At
I
Big
just
Bird.
Cried during Big Bird. All
right. You didn't cry for Bing Bong?
No. Okay, you go ahead. You build what? It up. I'll tear
what?
It down. Go ahead.
Look. It's not the best Pixar movie. Okay, that's sure, but that much like the Coen brothers, there's a lot of wiggle room when you're not the best of their movies, you know. So I think this is a very good movie. I think it's a very entertaining movie. I think the concept. Now, you can argue that I would say the concept has been stolen from various other things like Herman's Head.
Okay,
people are like, this is such a brilliant original concept. Well, I've kind of seen that idea done before, but. I thought they did it beautifully and eloquently, and there's a lot of running around. There's kind of a lot of generated activity where they're like, we've got to run from this collapsing infrastructure to the next. So on some regards, and yes, some of that's stolen from Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind where the memories are dissolving. Yes, but overall, it's still a Pixar movie. It's still, I took my parents and they loved it. Which is like my children. So I thought it really did a great job of being accessible to everybody. And that's what Pixar does. That's their magic.
Well,
and you didn't like it, you heartless bastard.
Well, here's my problem with it. First of all, okay, the concept of it is great. They got a really nice cast to do these inside voices of this little girl's head, which I thought was cute. The premise is great. It's a great premise for a movie. The problem is it turns into The Wizard of Oz, and it turns into like Up, which is another Pixar movie that I'm very proud to say that I did disliked.
Yeah.
Because it just becomes people chasing around each other, chasing each other around.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of that going on.
And it's that's annoying, and it's easy, and it's like they have no, you know, they have these concepts for the movie. First of all, Pixar wants to make you cry. That's their goal. They don't let the stories develop organically so you might cry if you're touched by it. They want you to. I mean, Toy Story 3, they just manipulated your fucking ass during that thing. and Up, and even like that opening sequence of Up where you see him and the wife, and you know, it's the story of them and she dies and stuff. That's genuinely moving and genuinely sad. But I feel like Inside Out was just trying to be manipulative. I was not, you know, it was just, it just, it feels, Pixar's feeling,
You're so anger, man.
It's feeling
Where's
phony.
Your joy?
Well, here's my joy. You want to talk about joy? We'll have another fight. Listen,
right,
listen. This was, not only was Inside Out a disappointment, there's another animated movie that I thought was much better than this, which we'll talk about later.
Okay.
And, yeah, Inside Out for me was, while not a bad movie, on like, I wouldn't say on a pass-fail, it's a fail, other than it's not as good as the other Pixar movies. It was a disappointment to me, considering, you know, their heritage and their legacy of making great
all
animated
right,
movies.
All right.
Inside Out just missed for me, and, yeah. So it's too bad, but it was I did not like it. So anyway, Inside Out. I believe you can rent that now if you want. By the way, Trumbo comes out February 16th, so next week.
Okay.
But Inside Out was Corey's number 12. Here's my number 12, which was, boy, when I talked about movies I didn't want to see going into making this list. This one was on a lot of lists, even though it didn't get any Oscar nominations. It's an indie movie. Not only is it an indie movie, this might be the indiest of all indie movies in the history of indie movies.
I think we have the same movie at the same time.
And indies of all indies. Since the history of indies, this movie encapsulates all indies. In fact, it's about indie movies. It's called Me and Earl and the Dying Girl.
Oh,
and no. It is the indiest fucking thing you will ever see.
Okay.
I mean, I described this. Let me see on my sheet. I described this movie as Garden State with cancer. Now, I hated Garden State, and I hate cancer, but I liked Me and Earl and the Dying Girl. It's actually a lot of fun. It is about a girl who dies of cancer or is dying of cancer. Now, did I ruin Me and Earl and the Dying Girl?
Says Dying Girl
in the title. But, yeah, I mean, it is set up to be sort of that manic pixie dream girl indie movie. But it's done with a lot of humor, and it's really well done. The guy,
it's Bridge to Terabithia, man.
Well, the director, Alfonso Gomez Rayon, was like an assistant to Martin Scorsese and some other really big directors. And this movie is just like it is this fetishization of films.
They do this kind of sweeted thing, which was from Be Quiet Rewind.
Okay, yeah.
Which wasn't a very good...
This is a better movie.
I like this movie better than that, but they do these little mini versions of movies where the titles are all spoofs.
Yeah, they do these spoofs. It's these two high school kids, and they make these movie spoofs. And it's not for, like, you know... They do some big action movies, but then they're doing all these, like, weird foreign films. And it's actually... In fact, there's so many, like, foreign and, like, classic movie references. Even I, who went to film school... had to be on my toes to catch all of these. Like, there's no way an average film goer is going to get all the references to some of the movies in here, which, you know, really, that's why I say this movie is really hardcore indie that way. They actually had the Criterion Collection people. They actually, like, used all of their library.
You're saying
you
haven't seen The Life and Death of Colonel Blimp?
I have seen The Life and Death of Colonel Blimp, but I'm the only fucking guy, me and you. So when you make a movie that references it,
all right, here's some of the ones they had.
And it's
Grumpy Cul-de-Sacs, which was their parody of Mean Streets.
Okay, yeah.
They did My Dinner with Andre the Giant.
Yeah, there's a million of these.
I'm not ruining it.
Yeah, you're not ruining them. But it ended up being a really good movie. I liked it visually.
Senior Citizen Kane.
The story is
The 400 Bros.
The story you might feel like you felt before, but the acting's really good. It's a real nice. Who were the adult leads in this? Nick Offerman, Connie Britton, Molly Shannon is the mom of the dying girl. So it was really well done.
John Barenthal,
from Walking Dead,
and soon will be the Punisher.
Yeah.
On Daredevil.
So there's a lot of good stuff in Me and Earl and the Dying Girl.
I liked it a lot also on my runners-up list.
Sure. Okay.
But I did like that movie quite a bit.
All right. Give me a number 11 then. And you can rent Me and Earl and the Dying Girl right now. It's out. You can see it. You should see it.
All right.
Give me an 11.
My number 11. This is a movie that is perhaps even more indie.
More indie than my indie. We're going to have a fight over which movie's more
indie. There can be nothing more indie
than
a movie that was shot on an iPhone 5.
Oh, what is that?
It's called Tangerine.
Oh, okay.
It is.
I heard of this.
It's a day in the life of transgender hookers on Hollywood Boulevard.
Yeah.
And that sounds like something you don't want to watch.
Yeah.
And it was it sounded just like something I didn't want to watch.
Yeah.
And it was praised at every festival. People lost their nut over this at Sundance. They blew their minds. And you know what? It's actually really good.
Yeah.
It's actually pretty compelling. Don't expect, you know, a huge plot developments or any. It's a slice of life.
Yeah.
It's really a couple of girl guys, lady men's. Yeah. It's really just follows a couple of them that are hookers.
Yeah.
On the street. There's a cab driver that's like a Ukrainian that picks them up and like kind of cares for them. And they've got this ridiculous pimp. And they hang out at this donut shop that's called Donut Time. That's a real donut shop in L.A. that's run by this Korean lady. And they shot on the bus, guerrilla filmmaking style. They shot everywhere, you know, with an iPhone 5. And damned if it isn't compelling and fresh and fun in an interesting way that I wasn't expecting it to be. And it doesn't look like it was shot on an iPhone 5.
Okay,
it looks really...
That's good,
it looks
good
pretty
for the
good.
iPhone 5, I guess.
I'm saying it looks pretty
okay,
good.
Cool.
In terms of, we're well past the point where we're impressed by digital filmmaking.
Well, if you put an iPhone 5 on like a gimbal or a tripod or something where it's not like handheld,
right.
The image quality of an iPhone 5 is actually pretty good. And you could make a passable, you know, digital projected film out of an iPhone, yeah. Because, I mean, the sensor, a lot of people are using, you know, like Canon SLR cameras to make some of these movies too. So,
it's a 5S. Well, excuse me.
Oh, it was an iPhone 5S.
Yeah. Oh. Anyway, Tangerine is remarkably much better than it has any.
Okay.
It feels like it's all improvised, and I'm sure some of it was, and most of it probably was. This is a shot as you know all the stuff they used to say. Oh, Kevin, you know Kevin Smith shot Clerks for like $10, and
yeah.
This was shot for nothing on the streets in a ghetto, you know, like
Cassavetes
style.
Yeah.
But you know what? It's really really compelling.
I had a list also of movies that I didn't get to see that I wanted to and just ran out of time.
Yeah.
And this was one of them. It's on Netflix now. If you want to watch Tangerine, right. It's on Netflix. Go ahead and cue that up. I heard it was really good. I saw all the Oscar movies and I ignored Tangerine. And just for the sake of time. So it's something I should see. All right. Here's my number 11 movie. And I know you saw this too. It might even be on your list. I don't know. You might have considered this a 2014. Because again, this is one that like, I don't even think that this thing even played in a theater ever. Maybe did a festival. But another documentary, Electric Boogaloo, the wild untold story of Canon Films. I know Corey loves
this. I should have.
You didn't put that on your list?
You know what? Didn't I tell you to watch it?
Yeah, I think you told me to watch it. But yeah. I was going to watch it anyway. But man, this thing, if you want just pure entertainment, this movie and just the clips, and even more so, you know, the story of Canon Films, which is these two guys from Israel, yes. Golan and Globus, and they set up this awful film studio, and they managed to make all, like,
Menachem Golan.
Yeah. They managed to make dozens and dozens of really awful low-budget movies, sometimes roping in giant American stars to be in them, Sylvester Stallone and... You know, some of these guys, Chuck, there's a lot of Chuck Norris in this, mm-hmm. a lot of, you know, Death Wish was their thing. But you see these clips of these movies.
They bought Canon, which was already an existing, Grindhouse producer in the 70s.
Yeah.
And they imported what they thought, what worked for them in Israel.
Yeah.
They made this movie called The Last American Virgin.
Yeah.
Which was just a remake of their Israeli sex comedy.
It was an Israeli sex comedy, yeah.
It was called, Lemonade Popsicle.
Yeah, that one I'd actually like to see. I've seen The Last American Virgin.
But they said, they didn't really even change anything. So, at one point, the guy brings, a Christmas tree to the girl in the hospital, and they're like, this must be some Israeli shit that we're not even aware of.
Yeah, it's really good. I mean, just the clips of, you know, the ninja movies they made. And
of this stuff was, the lifeblood for me. This was all on cable in the 80s. And American Ninja, mm-hmm. there's a movie in here called Ninja 3, The Domination.
Yes.
Which I have to watch again. It's spectacular.
And of course, this movie got its title from Breakin' 2 Electric Boogaloo. They made Breakin' and Electric Boogaloo.
Yeah.
You'll find out about the race to beat Beach Streets to the theater. Why Breakin' 2 was not as good as Breakin', according to the stars.
You know what? I should have had this on the list because...
And the actress from the Breakin' movies...
Linnea Quigley.
Yeah, she's the story of her, how she was their sort of their ingenue that they would put in all these awful movies.
Couldn't really act.
And couldn't act at all, yeah. But she was like this hot chick. It's really great. I mean, you will be...
Marina Sirtis is in... They talk about Michael Ritchie, the guy who directed... Is it Michael Ritchie? Their director, who's reckless with people and like didn't take the time to practice the stunts because he had to get the shit done.
Yeah.
And he... Marina Sirtis was like naked laying on a mattress with water dripping on her. And they're like, don't keep the shot going.
And they've got Sylvia Christel in this, who made those Emmanuel movies. It's a million bad movies all rolled into one, and it's great.
It's really, if you haven't seen the Lou Ferrigno Hercules, I pity you.
Right.
But it's like just as a compilation of the clips.
Right.
This is wildly entertaining.
And the story's great, too.
And then all the talking heads, the people are not, they do not hold back.
No.
This movie is one of the best behind-the-scenes Hollywood docs I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's really good.
I should have put that on my list.
Yeah, it's really great. It's on Netflix, so you can just cue that right up.
I don't
think
it ever played in a theater.
I don't think it did either, but boy, it's fun to watch on Netflix. If you love movies, if you remember the 80s, or even just wonder what the hell we were doing in the 80s. Yeah. This movie tries to explain it. And, of course, you know, the irony about this, and I think it's mentioned in a text thing at the end, was, you know, the Golan and Globus guys got wind that they were making this, and they said, we're going to make our own
movie.
They
made their own.
Called The Go-Go Boys, which I've never seen.
And they rushed their own hack job onto before this.
Which I never
saw.
Which
is what they did with their own
movies.
With
their other movies, yeah. They were trying to beat other movies.
What is that thing with the monkey?
Oh, I can't. You know what? There's like literally a million movies in this, and I can't even remember all the titles and stuff. You just got to see it.
They talk about how everybody hated Sharon Stone when they made Alan Quartermain.
There's so many great stories.
The Masters of the Universe movie.
Oh yeah,
where they literally ran out of the studio told them to stop shooting.
Yeah,
and came in and put like placards in front of the cameras. So they had to sneak in and finish the ending at night with Dolph Lundgren.
There's so many great things.
It's a wildly entertaining.
Watch that. Okay, number 10.
You know what? I should have had that on
this. Well, now you know. Go give us number 10, Corey. Come on.
All right. I have, in a 180 direction for that, Diary of a Teenage Girl.
Oh.
Yes.
I don't know what that is.
It's a movie almost no one saw.
Yeah, where do you see this?
It played in the theaters, okay. in the art house theaters. It's a movie about really felt intimate and lived in and honest. And it's about a 15-year-old girl in the 70s who has an affair with her mom's boyfriend.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. Oh. Which is the kind of thing you can't even really do anymore. You know, this guy would be arrested immediately at this point. But, you know, in the 70s, it's the lead actress is a British actress named Belle Powley, who is like 24, but she plays a 15-year-old very convincingly.
Does that mean you can see her naked in this?
Yes, she's like naked all over the place.
I'm in.
Right.
All right, that's going to do it for Joel Radio this week. Thanks a lot, everybody. We'll catch you. No, I mean...
Alexander Skarsgård plays the boyfriend.
Okay.
Kristen Wiig plays her completely irresponsible, hippie, drugged-out mother.
Well, it must be hilarious.
It's kind of a drag, but it's also...
Kristen Wiig was...
She finds...
Kristen Wiig used to be in comedies.
Yeah, I know. Okay. I know. I have another one on my list from her, but she does cartooning is her kind of her way through this time in her life. And anyway, I thought it was a gorgeously well done movie. And there aren't enough movies for and about women that are told from their perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was interesting. And about a girl who has sexuality and embraces it.
Okay.
It's about her embracing.
Right. It's not a Lifetime movie where she's victimized by some old dude. Yeah, it's not.
I mean, she seeks him out, and she knows that it's confusing and conflicting and all these feelings, but it's not like she's ever...
It happens.
Know. Yeah.
It happens. It happens where a teenager might find a 43-year-old man attractive.
Well, I don't know.
You know, and who has a podcast. I mean, that should be a movie.
Based on the graphic novel by Phoebe Gleckner.
Okay.
Good. It's worth checking out.
Where do you see that now? Why?
It is probably available. It's on Amazon Video right now for rental for $4.99.
For rental. Okay.
All right.
All right. Let me give you a number 10. This was on, you originally could have saw this on HBO, but it's considered, it was Oscar eligible, even though it didn't get nominated in Best Documentary. It's another documentary called Going Clear, Scientology,
okay,
and the Prison of Belief. This was on HBO, and it was on early in the year, so a lot of people saw it. Alex Gibney made this, who really makes good documentaries. And now, I actually thought that this movie was a little dry. It's pretty long for a documentary. I think it's over 2 hours long. I'm
yeah.
I don't have the runtime here. But it's very long, and the first hour is kind of dry. But the expose of Miscavige, the guy who leads Scientology, and Tom Cruise, and the way that people are locked away, and all of the Scientology revelations that are in this are really amazing. And I'm glad that they finally made a movie about this and shed some light on these wackos. And it's really well done. Is it, you know, the most... could I see people being bored with this? Yeah, I guess, but... Man, if you ever had any questions about Scientology, this will answer them, and it's frightening. So, Going Clear, you can if you have HBO or HBO Go or any of those.
The reason I did not it was HBO,
but it is considered a theatrical.
So that might have been why I didn't put it on my radar.
Yeah,
and the other reason I read the book, by Lawrence Wright, and I think the book, you know, not to be cliche, but I'll be cliche because this is, you know.
You knew this stuff in the book.
I read the book, and I thought the book's a little better.
Right, but the problem with the book is you're not seeing the people speaking, and that's why. That's what I'm saying. You have to make this movie because stuff about Scientology had been in books and newspapers and magazines and the internet about how awful Scientology was, but no one was making that movie that would expose it until finally Alex
I'll tell you what's,
did,
what's terrific.
And that's what's great about it.
I'll tell you what's terrific in this movie is the Nightline episode with David Miscavige.
Yeah.
He stopped pretty much doing press after this.
Well, he comes off as an idiot.
When you see the shit, you're right. The video is great. The book, though, if you're really interested in this, I think the legal department at HBO backed off on some of the stuff that's in the book.
Okay. Well, like, I'm sure the book's a deeper dive into Scientology, but again,
some of the
something about a documentary that's so
John Travolta's sex life and things, they go more explicitly into in the book. Right. Than they do in the movie.
Well, see, my thing is Travolta can be a big raging fag homo,
having
nothing to do with his religious belief. Mm-hmm. You know, the fact that he's hanging out in the bathhouse doesn't have to do anything with his science, with his religion.
They
but...
really do paint a case though, because they got Travolta early.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like he had just gotten Welcome Back, Kotter.
Yeah,
and I think they really got into him before even Saturday Night Fever came out, and they just did things like he had this. The woman who indoctrinated him into it, they eventually weaned her off of him. So he had this close relationship with this girl who was his friend, and then they basically isolated her. And they just all re-education camps where they got to like stand and paint walls all day and like do push-ups and like really weird.
And that director, Paul Haggis, has a real major part in this. He was a Scientologist.
Yes.
For a lot of years, Oscar-winning director Paul Haggis, and he's blowing the whistle in this. It's really great. Mm-hmm. If you have any interest
in Scientology, and L. Ron Hubbard is a real wacky, and I think the book does a little better job on showing you how nuts he was. All the nautical stuff and all the naval uniforms they wear in Scientology were basically he was in the Navy in World War II, and was kind of a fuck up. He fired on shit erratically that he wasn't supposed to shoot at, and like. He basically spent his whole life reimagining himself as an admiral. It's just, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's just crazy stuff. It's a great, the documentary is well worth seeing. I just didn't go with it because of the book. But.
All right, well, it's great. If you have HBO, you've got it right now, so go watch
there you
it.
Go.
It's great. All right, give me a number 9, I think you're up
all
to.
All right. This is a little film called The End of the Tour.
End of the Tour.
Yes.
I know what that is, but I didn't see it.
You know, no one saw it. And I think that's a real shame because I believe, now I know people, there's a lot of controversy about the Oscar nominations this year. And not enough, you know, Kevin Hart didn't get nominated for, Ride Along 2 or Get Hard. But I think the guy who really should have a bitch about being overlooked is Jason Segel, who was terrific in this movie. Jesse Eisenberg is very good too. It's basically a two-hander, as they'd say, for the most part, where it's two characters.
Yeah.
But it's Jesse Eisenberg plays a Rolling Stone writer who goes on a book tour, at least the last leg of a book tour with David Foster Wallace.
Okay.
The late novelist.
Yes.
Which Jason Segel plays, and Segel plays him fabulously. And it's a really brilliant script, really thoughtful. It's a movie with conversations and ideas. And you know what? We don't have those very much.
No.
I'm really sounding like a film critic here, and I'm sorry for longtime listeners, and I'm not, you know, talking more about the figs.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, this is a wonderful little movie. Jason Segel's great. They're kind of, it really shows you the relationship between a journalist and the subject in that they're both trying to game each other. And they're both trying to work each other over this, but they're also having something approximating a real friendship and a real understanding between each other in the course of this little hotel, you know, this little road trip to Wisconsin and Minnesota, which is really cool. And David Foster Wallace was a brilliant and strange and an interesting guy, and this movie does a pretty good tribute to him.
Yeah, I didn't see this because it was, again, it was on my list with Tangerine of movies that I wanted to see but didn't have a chance. You can rent this now, I know. You can whatever, digitally rent it, get it on DVD, however you want to get it. So, yeah, it's supposed to be good. End of the tour. I'm sorry I didn't see it. But
it's even cheaper on Amazon Video than Diary of a Teenage Girl.
There you
go. So we'll get that.
Yeah, that's Corey's number nine. For my number nine, I'm calling this the best comic book movie of the year, of last year. It's not Ant-Man. Mm-hmm. You want to take another guess at what it might be?
It is Archie in Riverdale.
Yes.
No, what is it?
Betty and Veronica's
yes.
giant black double team. No. It's called, you didn't see that one.
I would love that
that's
one.
Actually pretty good. Yeah, that's.
Do they have a black friend?
I don't think so.
They must have one.
Do you think they must have thrown one in at some point in the series?
Yeah, eventually they had to come up with a black friend.
They had to, because even Happy Days.
Jughead.
Even Happy Days had like a black guy.
Reggie, you know, they did not have a black friend. Right, right. Styx.
Yeah, Styx.
Yeah, but then Styx disappeared.
Styx, well, he was like on maybe 2-3 episodes, Styx.
Yeah.
Maybe not a lot of black guys in late 50s
you mean,
Milwaukee.
You mean, so that you're telling me that the live version of Grease was inaccurate? Did you see that?
I saw some of Grease Live, and not the whole thing. Well, first of all, who could watch the whole thing? It was 3 fucking hours.
No one can do that.
But yeah, Grease Live had black people and Puerto Ricans.
Grease
and all
was
kind
set
of
in a high school.
Asians and all.
Yeah, it was
of
set
stuff,
in a Brooklyn high school in the 50s.
Yeah,
in which everybody had 1.3 black friends.
Yeah.
You know, do you remember when the Italian gangs had black guys in them?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Remember that? Isn't that the whole point of a street gang?
You're right, yeah.
Is that it's like the Irish kids are with
against
the Irish
the black
kids,
guys and the Puerto Ricans against
with the
black
guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
No, like, hey, here's our one Filipino friend.
Yeah, right.
It's in our fucking Jewish gang.
Yeah,
no!
Yeah.
It's not how that works.
Yeah, they made the coach a black guy.
Yeah, it was
Sid Caesar in the movie,
and they
found some black guy to be the coach.
Look, it's not that I don't, and people go, well, Corey, why do you say that? It's the factual fucking, I know it's Grease.
Yeah, okay? It's Grease. Who cares?
So I know it's a fairy tale, but it did seem silly.
It did. It seemed like they were forcing the race issue.
But there will be kids that will see that and not know that that's how that shit should have been.
Well, this movie's got a black guy in it.
A black.
An actual black guy.
Okay.
He's the villain. Is that count?
Okay.
Okay. Kingsman: The Secret Service is my number nine movie. Colin Firth, Michael Caine, Samuel L. Jackson is the villain in this.
Yeah.
And it's really well done. You know, Matthew Vaughn is the guy who made this, and
Mark Strong.
Yeah, Mark Strong is
actually playing a good guy for once.
Mark Strong is just a great guy. He's a great actor. When you see him, you just go, "Oh, that's that guy."
He almost always
and he's
plays
Mark Strong.
He almost always plays villains.
Yeah.
He plays villains, or occasionally he'll play the stiff upper lip guy in a period piece.
But
he's great in this.
Yeah, so Kingsman: Secret Service, it's based on, I guess, I don't know if it's a comic or is it a graphic novel?
Yeah, comic book.
Sure. Comic book. And I guess they're making more of these because it was successful. But Matthew Vaughn also made Kick-Ass, and he made X-Men First Class. And his name is always bandied about for the new, you know, we're going to make a new one of these. Matthew Vaughn's always in the mix for those because he does a good job with these. But he decided to make Kingsman, and it opened like early in the year, and it made way more money than people thought it was going to make. So it was kind of a sleeper hit.
It's really ridiculously violent.
It's crazy violent. It's
insanely violent and sometimes almost stomach churning.
Well, it's
really over the top and ridiculous.
But it's
an entertaining.
It's Kill Bill levels of violence with like kind of comic book humor.
It has
and
a comic-y tone.
And so it's really, you know, interesting. It's a mashup. It's not for kids, but yet it's juvenile in a sense. It's really cool, you know, when you think about the Bond movies and it sort of has elements of that in it. The spy organization and how they hide out under the streets of London and stuff is really cool. You know, it's on HBO right now if you want to watch Kingsman. You can go stream that.
Yeah, it's
get it on demand.
Very entertaining.
Yeah, very good. Well done. I thought it was the best comic book movie of the year. Not a fan of comic book movies, but I'm a fan of Matthew Vaughn, and I like Kingsman.
Well, you wouldn't know the comic book source material anyway.
Yeah, so. That has no.
In fact, I hadn't really ever read the Kingsman comics.
But you know what? You don't need to when you see a movie like this. It's really good. Watch Kingsman. You'll enjoy it. It's fun. All right, give us a number 8. And not all of these movies are fun. That is, I'm looking at the rest of my list, and I go, what a depressing fucking list.
Here's
of
a movie you're not going to think is fun.
No.
Joy.
Joy. Oh, yeah.
Number 8.
Let's talk about Joy.
David O. Russell's film Joy, starring Jennifer Lawrence and Bradley Cooper and Robert De Niro, which is what he's had in the last
movie. Yeah, that's every movie.
And also Virginia Madsen in a bug nuts crazy role.
Yeah.
I liked Joy a lot. I really liked Joy a lot, and most people didn't.
No.
It got real mixed reviews.
I'm with most people.
And I think certain critics couldn't wrap their head around it because it's the story of the lady who made the mop on QVC.
Yeah.
And I think there was a kind of a social class and taste issue in which critics kind of went, that's not about anything important. They'll jerk off. They'll form a circle jerk. They'll get their gun oil out, and they'll jerk each other all off in a circle all day about a movie about Basquiat, a homeless jerk off who slapped some paint on a canvas and fooled rich people into buying his paintings. But the woman who sold mops on QVC, they'll look down their fucking noses at. And that, to me, the snobbery directed towards Joy Mangano, who is the actual person that this is based on, really bit my ass. This is a fairy tale. It's got a tone that is hard for people to understand. It has got an elevated reality. It's not reality. It is a fairy tale story set in the most plebeian, quotidian, daily misery of a woman who's struggling to make it as a single mother, and she comes up with a better mop, a better idea for a mop, and that changes her life. And it's about her willpower. This is the most feminist movie of the year, by the way. Even more so than Diary of a Teenage Girl. And I didn't see chicks getting behind this movie at all.
No?
They wanted to hate on it.
Well,
they wanted to hate on J-Law. Well, you're all cocked in the head. It's a great movie.
All right, let me give my review. I went to the theater to see Joy.
Yeah.
And I saw it with a bunch of women. And here's my problem. Well, there was no reaction to anything in this movie from the audience that I saw with. There was no laughter. There's times this movie's trying to be funny and it's not funny. There was no reaction at the end. I mean, this movie, here's my problem. You describe this as a fairy tale, but to me, the problem with this movie is it doesn't have a consistent tone. It's trying to be this gritty, you know, Horatio Alger rags to riches story, and yet it's trying to be a fairy tale at the same time, and it doesn't work because it's neither one nor the other. It's trying to be both, and it doesn't work. Jennifer Lawrence is good in it. De Niro is good in it, even though the first 5 minutes I wanted to throw De Niro out the fucking window, but it turns out De Niro ended up being pretty good in this.
Well, De Niro is only good these days in David O. Russell movies.
Well, he's good in this, and I liked it, and I tried
you
to like this
find
movie.
That, when that scene where he's yelling at Virginia Madsen, you creature from the Black Lagoon,
well,
that didn't make you laugh?
A lot of the other actors, it's an ensemble, a lot of the other actors were either annoying. Isabella Rossellini I found really annoying in this.
Okay. The woman who plays Elizabeth Rome, the woman who plays her stepsister.
Yes.
Her wicked stepsister.
Yeah.
It's the best performance of the year.
Well.
Because I didn't hate a single character.
Well,
I didn't hate a single character or villain or person in a movie more than I hated that goddamned Trudy. Peggy.
Okay.
Peggy was her fucking stepsister. She's the wicked stepsister. Every word out of her mouth is complete and utter disparaging venom towards Joy, and I loved it. It was really delicious. I think the movie's good. I think people were confused because there's no romance in it.
Well,
she has her ex-husband who's kind of the love of her life but is kind of her friend, and then Bradley Cooper she doesn't have a romance with, but they form kind of a partnership.
He doesn't even do anything. They could have got any guy to play that. They could have got some character actor to do the Bradley Cooper role. He does nothing in this.
It's not a huge
no, but
It's not a juicy role, but no.
No one's confused about this movie. Everyone saw this and said it wasn't that good. It's not that it's like the worst movie of the year. It's just not great. And, you know, I had the same problems I had with a lot of, I actually liked this better than I liked American Hustle, which everyone seemed to like. I thought was annoying. The Fighter bored bored me to fucking tears.
Yeah.
Silver Linings Playbook was good. I'll give him that. But yeah, this is not Silver Linings Playbook.
Well,
Silver Linings Playbook was an actual fairy tale that worked. It had heart. You cared about the people. The kids in this movie, Joy, are just fucking props. You never believe that they're her actual kids. There's nothing in there that the kids aren't there except for like some cute quip. It's really they're really one dimensional. This movie just didn't work. Look, I know you're a David O. Russell kiss ass. And he's your favorite guy and the whole fucking thing.
You know what?
But Joy was a bore. It was not joyful. It was boring. It has nothing to do with the mop. There's a Bruce Springsteen song in this. I still didn't like it. I didn't like Joy. Thumbs down.
Oh, I think people are going to come around to this movie eventually.
No, I just gave you 10. I'm giving you 15 good movies to watch. You don't have to watch this. Please. Jennifer Lawrence is good in it, but come on. Come on.
I think the tone was hard for people to digest.
Yeah, because it's not. There's no consistent tone. It's not there.
That's David O. Russell, though.
Yeah, but he's,
and I think
yeah.
That's
when
why
I just told you three of his last four movies sucked.
Yeah, you're wrong.
Okay.
You're completely wrong. Well, yeah. David O. Russell is brilliant. I think he's a great director. I think people aren't quite wrapping themselves around his energy.
Well, but they've sucked his balls.
The one movie
for
his,
three okay, movies right, they've nominated right. him in every
now,
fucking category.
The one movie
they've nominated
I don't...
every the last three David O. Russell movies everyone loved. Now they turned on him. No, his movies aren't that good. Come on.
The one I don't like of his is I Heart Huckabee.
Okay,
that's too much whimsy and mirth. That doesn't work. But
like David O. Russell. Spanking the Monkey was a great debut movie in the 90s. But I'm bored with it.
He made a movie called Accidental Love that got a 7%.
Yes.
And I didn't even hear it.
Well, that's one that they like shelved for a long time. Right?
They shelved it.
And then when he got big with, Silver Linings Playbook, I think they dragged that out of the vault or something. But yeah, he's, David O. Russell's talented. It does feel, and especially with his use of De Niro, and I really felt this in American Hustle, it feels like fake Scorsese. And there's guys who do fake Scorsese. Paul Thomas Anderson does fake Scorsese.
This is interesting. I think what he does is a little bit between Woody Allen and Scorsese.
Well,
it's got like that very neurotic Jewish energy to it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like a very like...
When the year American Hustle came out, Scorsese put out Wolf of Wall Street. Now, Wolf of Wall Street was too long and wasn't a great movie, but boy, it fucking knocked the shit out of American Hustle. American Hustle looked like a piece of garbage next to that. The
like
energy in Wolf of Wall Street was genuine and killer, and American Hustle was just a bore in comparison.
Oh, you're... Okay.
In comparison.
What's interesting, though...
Let's
also,
fight about a movie from 3 years
hold
ago.
Hold on. Okay, The Fighter, 90% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Look,
Silver Linings, 92.
People get fooled.
American Hustle, 93.
Yeah.
Joy, 60.
Yeah.
So I think this was the movie where they
finally... The gravy train's over.
No, people just go, let's take him down a peg.
Well...
I think Joy is very good.
I just think I think if Joy was good, people would have loved it. Everyone wants to love Jennifer Lawrence. Everyone wants to love Bradley Cooper. You see the movie, it's just not that good. It's not that hard to figure out. The movie's not that good.
I think it's great.
She made a mop. Who gives a fuck? Now, granted, you can make a good movie about a lady who made a mop, but this isn't it. This isn't it.
I'm sticking with Joy. I'm defending it.
Yeah. Because usually what happens is when I tell you something sucks, usually what you do is you go, Joel, you're right. I'm going to agree with you. And for this time, you're going to be stubborn all of a sudden. Okay. All right. Let's give you a number 7. Let's give you a good movie. Actually, I got to give you a number 8. I haven't given you a number 8.
All right, file.
Well, here's a movie. Speaking of no joy, it's a movie called Beasts of No Nation. It's on Netflix. It was actually released in theaters for a couple of weeks to be Oscar eligible. It's about child soldiers in a West African war, a civil war. And it's completely grim. It's completely dark. It's hard to watch. And yet it's really good. It was directed by a guy named Kari Joji Fukunaga.
Okay, yeah.
He's directed a couple movies. He actually made season 1 of True Detective on HBO. Mm. If you like that was the same guy. Idris Elba is the only actor that you'd know from this, because it's mostly just like African kids in this movie.
Yeah.
I described this on my little cheat sheet here as Full Metal Jacket in Africa with a 9-year-old boy. So if that sounds fun to you, gather up the wife and kids, sit down in front of the TV, pop some popcorn, pop open a couple of Dr. Peppers, and enjoy children doing drugs and shooting each other in the head. It's Beats of No Nation. It's on Netflix. Right.
This is exactly the kind of movie that feels like homework.
Oh, yeah.
A little bit. And most people go, I didn't see that, because why would I want to go see that?
No, I know.
I get mad at people all the time because they don't challenge themselves. They don't go see riskier movies. They don't go see better movies. But I understand the impulse. It's hard to get people to go, hey, go see Suffragette, where they torture Carey Mulligan for wanting to vote.
Yeah.
Not that that made my list, but but a bummer of a movie.
Sure, yeah. Well, this year was full of bummers.
But an interesting movie and worthwhile.
2015 is nothing but, in fact, I think we're nothing but bummers from here on out on my list. God. It's But if you haven't seen, I'm taking you haven't seen Beasts of No Nations.
I did not see it.
Yeah, it's on Netflix. It's really good. I mean, the cinematography, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's really well done. You definitely care about these people. The thing about it too that's interesting is I read the Wikipedia. It's based on a book, but apparently it's not even based on like a real war. It's all, you know, what could happen and certainly does happen, but it's not really based on any real event, but it feels really, really real. And of course this is the big Oscar controversy where Idris Elba, I think, was the guy that they're putting out there to really be the best supporting actor nominee, and he didn't get nominated. So they're saying you get an all-white Oscar. He actually won the, where's my list of those? He won the SAG Award for Best Supporting Actor, and he's not even Oscar nominated in that category, so that's a little weird. It's really good. You should check it out. I mean, again, is it a bummer? Sure. Will you have more fun watching Electric Boogaloo? Absolutely.
You will have a lot more fun watching Electric Boogaloo.
Beasts of No Nation is really well done. I can't deny it. It's great. So
now
go see it.
Let's move into a lighter topic.
Number 7 from Corey,
which is sexual molestation of children.
Oh, well, why not?
But presented by a comedian.
Oh,
this is a documentary called Call Me Lucky.
Yes,
from Bobcat Goldthwait.
Sure, I've heard of him.
Who you have met and worked with.
I'm not going to go through the Bobcat story again.
No.
But you can.
Who you famously called Bob.
Oh yeah, that upset him. Well, yeah. we learned how he got his Bobcat name in this documentary,
he and Tom Kenny,
yeah,
were called Bobcat and Tomcat.
They were named that by,
Barry Crimmins.
Barry Crimmins.
Barry Crimmins is a legendary Boston comedian, kind of like an underground. He's a comics comic.
Yeah. And, well, he was around in the 80s. He just never became super famous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think Hicks stole some of his thunder, but
influential without being famous himself. Yeah.
Well, anyway, there's a parade of guys that come in and talk about how great Barry Crimmins was, including Lenny Clark and David Cross and a lot of guys. And I had never really seen, I've heard the name Barry Crimmins a couple times, but had never really gotten into his stuff. Mm-hmm. He was a comedian in the 80s, and he was very political and very edgy and very dark. And he talks about how all of that energy and anger came out of what happened to him in his childhood. And I don't want to get into it too much, but he then became an advocate and a crusader and stepped up and did things heroically in a way that you don't necessarily expect a Dick Chuck technician who's playing at Milk Through the Nose. Or Fuddruckers,
right?
To do and it's a great story.
Yeah, it's a great story. I saw this as well, and I liked it. I have my other 10 documentaries that were really good, and it's on that list. So okay. I like Call Me Lucky. It didn't quite make my top 15.
Maybe it's because it's about a comic.
Yeah, and that's good.
But I thought it was pretty moving and pretty powerful stuff.
Yeah, it was. I thought the comedy stuff. If you want to know more,
Barry Crimmins liked my tweet the other day.
Oh, okay,
so I'm excited.
If you want to know more about Crimmins and that scene, because Crimmins is the guy who started the Ding Ho Comedy Night, which was the big Boston club. There's a documentary called When Stand Up Stood Out that he's in. And I think there's actually clips of that in Call Me Lucky.
Yeah.
Some of the same footage is used in both movies. That's not about the dark side of Crimmins.
No, but it's all the Boston guys.
Yeah. And you see Barry Crimmins today, and you see some of the, you know, the speeches he's given. And, you know, he's definitely an important guy. And I want to even talk about what happens in the movie because I think it's a surprise.
Well,
and
look,
I want you to see some
of that. I understand why his career didn't blossom in a way.
Yeah.
But I think he's an interesting and very, very smart guy and well worth
seeing. Well, you know, it's like the best documentaries. This is not a story that you would know. So the fact that Bobcat made a movie about this guy who's his friend and shone a light on a lot of the good stuff that he's done, aside from just doing cocaine and telling dick jokes, you know, he's done a lot of good in the world, and it's good that they made this movie. It's entertaining, I guess, to a point.
It's rough. It's hard to watch.
In fact, that might be why I didn't like it as much as that. It was maybe a little too depressing for me. Although, like I said, it was a year of the bummer movie. It really was, including documentaries.
Well, it's both a bummer, but also it's about his comedy being kind of his redemptive way work through that stuff. So anyway.
You can see this on Netflix. Call Me Lucky. It was good. So.
All right, there you go.
It was a good pick. All right, number six for me, I think we're on to my... I don't know. I feel like we're jumping. Like I'm jumping over you, but I'm writing down all of your picks. So I'm on my number six. Another documentary, another movie you can see on Netflix. In fact, they actually were the distributors of this one, called Winter on Fire, Ukraine's Fight for Freedom. It's Oscar-nominated as Best Documentary.
Oh, okay.
In fact, it's the only Oscar-nominated Best Documentary that I put on my top 15, and it's great. What happened was in Kiev, I think it was Kiev, the capital of the Ukraine, there was a protest. You have to see the documentary. They're protesting because, you know, whatever the policies of the government they didn't like. And all of the Ukraine came out to sit in the city square and protest, kind of like, you know, Arab Spring in Egypt and that kind of stuff. And what happened was that the leader of the Ukraine decided, as they were telling him to step down, he sent the goon squad out. And it lasted for months. And it was all caught on people's iPhones. And it was all caught on, you know, and the brutality. I mean, you're actually seeing the war take place in this movie. And it's amazing because it's being, you know, waged by, you know, students, and it's being waged by housewives, and it's being waged by just common people who stood up to the government. And you see people being shot dead in the streets in this. It's really something else. Of course, this ended up becoming, Crimea. Which was a little piece of the Ukraine that Russia ultimately invaded, was a result of this conflict that you'll see in this documentary. Again, not a lot of fun, but really some of the most amazing, incredible footage. And that's what we have now, is because everybody's got a phone. Mm-hmm. They made a documentary that was on Netflix that was about, I think it was called The Square. It was about the uprising in Egypt a couple years ago. That was really good. This is, I think, is even better, though. I knew that happened on the news. You saw little things about it on CNN and our national news. But until you've seen this footage, you never know how intense it was, how amazing the bravery of the people to stand up to their government was, and really the awful things that the government did in response. Well, it was something else.
You know, the revolution is being televised.
Yeah.
And in Egypt, you know, there's a guy, Bassem Youssef, who is like the Egyptian John Stewart.
Okay.
And he basically did his own kind of Egyptian daily show, and went after the revolution, went after Morsi, and eventually they took his show off the air.
Yeah,
but he's now on YouTube.
Okay,
and he's like, they can't shut that down.
Yeah,
no matter what they try to do,
right?
We get back around it, and this is the kind of thing. The video is available.
Yeah.
It's really hard to keep propaganda going in the way that it used to work.
And, you know, they do a lot of this thing where they put up the map and you see the graphic of, you know, they went from this place to this place and then they were cut off by the government. And then you see the actual fighting that took place there. And it's just, I mean, the stuff that the government was doing to these people, the beatings in the streets, they actually got these gangs. They actually took people out of jail. They took the most violent prisoners out of jail and they said, hey, if you guys want to go crazy and beat up these protesters, we'll let you out of jail. If you go and be, it's insane what happened there. And the Ukrainian people are so Western, too. That's the other thing, that it's not like Egypt where you go, well, these are all a bunch of towel-headed, brown-colored, you know, camel jockeys.
Hey, now.
I'm not saying that's what you said, but hey.
I didn't say that.
What? That's what your T-shirt says, Corey. What are you talking about? No, I mean, but you know, it's it really.
What I said was these falafel eating, garlic smelling, gold chain wearing D bags.
Yeah. Well. Oh, sorry. No, but the Ukrainians are very Western. It really, you can really, you know, see, like, boy, if I was in the Ukraine, I guess I'd have to go protest, and I think they might have killed me.
Well,
it's really amazing, you know?
This is the kind of thing when, this is why I almost beat up an old man at Thanksgiving, who, when he said, boy, that Putin's a real leader, you know, he gets the job done.
Yeah.
And I just went, Putin? And I of course, snapped and had a Hulk out. Because Russia's not our friend.
Well, Putin's not the guy that's at fault here, although, you know, he's a guy who was, you know, I think sympathetic to Putin.
No, but he got involved in the Ukraine situation, so, I mean.
Yeah. But you should see this. Again, is it fun? Absolutely not. But Winter on Fire, it's my number 6 movie of the year. Get it on Netflix. Get the kids. Put them down. Tell them, hey, snow day today. Why don't we watch Winter on Fire?
But, I mean, wasn't the Crimean invasion basically to get the Ukraine back under control?
Yeah, because that was, you know, this took place in the capital. Mm-hmm. Crimea took place in the south of the Ukraine and is a whole other conflict, but it was Russia's way of getting back at them for what happened in Kiev that you'll see in the movie. So, actually, you know what happened is I skipped over my 7 because it was what we do in the shadows. That's why we're on to my 6. So you give me a 6 now.
All right, number 6, another... comedy from another from a guy known for doing comedy.
Yeah.
And this is sort of a comedy. It's a comedy,
it's
technically.
Okay. The Ridiculous Six with Adam Sandler.
Yes, absolutely.
No, not that.
No. It's called The Big Short.
Big Short.
From director Adam McKay, who is like Will Ferrell's personal butt boy.
Well, he made Anchorman.
Yes.
Amongst
he's done a lot mostly known
Step
for...
Step Brothers, I think, was his.
Yes, which I love, by the way. That's my...
Talladega Nights, I think, was this guy.
Step Brothers is my favorite Will Ferrell movie because John C. Reilly's so damn funny. But yeah, anyway, that's what Adam McKay is known for. And this is a big step in a different direction. Mm-hmm. I thought this movie, it's about real estate and finance and basically hedge fund operations. You couldn't have a topic I could care less about or be... less financial maneuverings generally don't interest me. But this film lays out exactly why.
Yeah.
Because they are intentionally confusing. They're intentionally late. The people who run Wall Street want this stuff to be as boring and obtuse and hard to penetrate. Mm-hmm. And they use terms that no one else understands. Credit default swaps. And, you know, they use this stuff that no one could really... these mechanisms that they've used to manipulate the system. So basically what they did is they started taking mortgages, which used to be boring. No one would wage money on mortgages because people paid their fucking mortgages.
Yeah.
What they started to do was lump all of the mortgages together and sell them as a bond. And this started in Michigan, actually, with the Michigan Pension Fund.
Yeah.
And they said we can commodify this and turn it into a bond. I'm not the best guy to explain this stuff.
Well, I saw Big Short. It's good. They try to explain it, and they do it by having Margot Robbie
in a
bathtub.
Yeah,
and Selena
Tony
Gomez
Bourdain shows up.
Yeah, it's they do some weird
and that
analogies.
Stuff is funny.
And it was funny. It's a good movie. I liked it. It's actually Oscar nominated for Best Picture. And
Christian Bale plays this. Okay, this is about the people who predicted that the mortgage crisis was going to happen and that the economy was going to tank. And it's about a handful of guys that were way ahead of the system and way ahead of the game and saw that this collapse was coming. And one of them was, Christian Bale, who played this crazy genius guy who played the drums and listened to heavy metal.
He's a metalhead investment banker.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, and was just a weirdo. And so I don't think people took him completely seriously.
Yeah,
but he saw it coming.
Yeah, he's the Big Short. He literally shorted this mortgage bond, which ended up making him a ton of money.
Right,
and costing everyone else. But it is great. You know, it's an ensemble cast. Steve Carell is in here.
Yeah,
Brad Pitt is in here.
Yeah.
Ryan Gosling is in here, and it's very well done. I think my favorite scenes were probably when Carell and those guys go to Florida.
Oh, yeah.
And they look for the bad mortgages, and they go from house to house. and they find strippers that have two mortgages. Oh, yeah. And it's really funny.
What's great is that. What's great is that the frigging money market, the frigging what do you call that? Hedge fund guys.
Yeah.
Steve Carell's a hedge fund operator, and they find the realtors and the mortgage lenders to be even more scummy
than
the people in Wall Street.
And it's the guy from
there's a great scene where the guys are just like, there's a couple asshole buddies. Yeah. Isn't Schwartz the guy?
It's Schmidt from New Girl's one of those guys. Yeah, that's a great scene. There's some really good stuff in here. I thought that the movie is a little obtuse with all of the jargon and stuff that you see in here.
Well,
it's a great story. You know, again, this was the year of the historical movie.
Yes.
And for me, I had some better historical movies a little higher. So while I liked it, it didn't make my top 15.
I thought what I liked about it was that they made you root for the economy to collapse.
Yeah,
so that the
prove those guys right.
So that the heroes of the movie were correct, even though they aren't really heroes. Nobody's really a hero in this.
Yeah.
Maybe Brad Pitt's character, but that's because it's Brad Pitt and he gets to make himself look good.
Yeah, well, it's a good movie. I thought Christian Bale's a little too wacky. You know, I'm getting kind of sick of his shtick a little bit.
That's Christian Bale.
There's shtick, yeah, and there's a lot of shtick.
You know what?
This
was a different kind of Christian Bale shtick for me, so I was amused by it. but I hear your point.
Well, I like the other guys. I'm saying I liked Carell and Gosling and those other guys better than him.
I expected this to be a bomb.
Yeah.
I thought this wasn't going to work.
Yeah.
And when it did work, I was surprised.
Yeah, it works well. It's a good movie. I enjoyed it. Again, it's on my list of other ones, and it is nominated for Best Picture. I believe it comes out. Let me see if I have written down. I don't know when. It comes out relatively soon, I think, on DVD. Christian Bale's nominated for Best Supporting Actor, and it's nominated for Best Picture. It's definitely worth a look. I enjoyed Big Short.
All right.
Let me give you my number five movie. Number five. Well, again, when I said there's better historical movies with ensemble casts that were made this year, that's my number five pick, and that's Spotlight.
Oh, yeah.
Which is nominated in a million categories, I think, at the Oscars this year, including Best Picture. Let's see. Mark Ruffalo is nominated for Best Supporting Actor, and Rachel McAdams for Best Supporting Actress, and it's also nominated for Best Director. This is the story of the way the Boston Globe uncovered the Catholic molestation scandal, the priest molestation scandal, and the whole backstory of that. I guess it was a book, or was it just the stories?
I think they compiled all of the articles
from the.
It was a long piece in like Vanity Fair.
Yeah, the Spotlight team,
and then it became a book. Yeah,
which is the special investigative team at the Boston Globe. It's the behind the scenes of that. Michael Keaton.
Rachel
McAdams and
Mark Ruffalo in an insane, wacky, but really great performance.
Yeah, he's great because he's kind of the lead guy that goes out and comes up with all of this thing.
Yeah.
And you know, it is all the President's Men. It is. And that's the one thing I think, if there's any knock on this, is that it does feel like, you know, it is the movie of the guy going through files late at night, and then he pulls a piece of paper out of the file cabinet, and then he looks at it, and the camera zooms in as he reads it, but we don't know what's on it till they cut to the next day, and he's in the Boston Globe offices, and he's reading the document to everyone else, and the camera's zooming out, and they do that 50,000 times in the movie, but it's still effective, and it's really good.
It's really
it's a great story.
It's hard to make writing and journalism
It's
exciting.
It's a movie about a guy looking through papers.
Yeah.
But it's great. It's great.
Which is what reporting is.
Yeah, I know.
And it's boring. But I thought this movie is a real love letter to journalism.
Oh, absolutely.
It's an absolute tribute to them. You know personally that there's nothing on earth that I hate more than the Catholic Church.
Yeah, absolutely. You can hate them more after this movie.
These scumbags are the lowest of the low.
Yeah.
This is why Penn State can burn in hell.
Yeah.
You bunch of pricks. If you cover up for a molester, or Notre Dame, bite my ass.
Well, the way they figured out what the archdiocese was doing with moving these priests around was a pretty ingenious way to bust them, I thought. Without giving it away here on the show. So yeah, and Ruffalo. It's funny. I saw Ruffalo. And I go, well, they gave Ruffalo this weird haircut. Like, why would they do this?
He's always got his hands in his jeans.
And then you see the real guy that he's playing, and you're like, oh, Jesus Christ, the real guy's a mess.
By the way, this movie did the excellent, what I call the casting director's money shot.
Yeah.
Where you know, they show you the real people and you go, oh, that looks just like them.
Yeah, you can see them online.
Actually,
too,
you know what? They don't think they did at the end
they
of the
They don't show them the real... No, if you go on the web, though, there's lots of articles about the real people.
Like they did in Argo, where they're like,
yeah,
here's...
Yeah.
Look how good we did at casting. Yeah. But they actually did... I thought, oh, Rachel McAdams, boy, they're really doing her a favor.
No, and she looks
And then I see the real reporter, and I went, oh, she's attractive.
Yeah. Ruffalo, that guy was real goony, though, the real Ruffalo guy.
Oh, yeah.
Ruffalo's way too handsome, so they give him kind of a shitty haircut to make him look bad. But, yeah, if you go to... There's a great website called...
That was my... Spotlight's my number two.
Okay. Well, there's a great movie. There's a website called History versus Hollywood, and they'll give you the side-by-side comparisons of all these movies. So anything from Trumbo to Big Short... to Spotlight, any of these historical movies that we talked about this year. They're all on there, so you can go through there and see those. Yeah, it was your number two. Okay, I'm going to write down Spotlight. I wrote down Spotlight for two, but that was...
And you know, again, a movie on the surface, you think, boy, that doesn't sound like fun.
It's not fun, but
that
good.
Sounds like homework.
Yeah.
It's not... There's no robots raping a dinosaur.
No.
Nothing explodes. Chris Pine doesn't look into the camera and go, whoa! you know, there's no midgets or aliens or CGI. But it's a great movie. It's what... It had a 70s feel.
Yeah.
In
all
terms
the President's
of a
Men, yeah, sure.
Sidney Lumet kind of thing and All the President's Men, absolutely. It's the kind of movie we should go see.
Yeah. It's an important movie, and it's really good.
It's a movie for adults.
Yeah.
That's what... That's sure. what we used to make in this country.
Yeah.
That we don't make.
Right, give us and that comes out on DVD February 23rd. So you can go watch that. It's really good. Give us a number five, Corey.
Number five, a movie came out early in the year. Got a little forgotten, but I think it was a terrific movie, Ex Machina.
Mm-hmm. I liked it as well. You know, it's funny. That was my number three movie.
All right.
Was Ex Machina.
Well, now, see, we're coming together a little
we're
bit.
Coming together.
After the calamity of joy. Yeah, but a great, great movie. A cool little flick from Alex Garland.
Who was really, I think it's his first directorial movie. He'd written a bunch of movies.
Well, there's a bunch of debut filmmakers on this list. There's Mean Earl and The Dying Girl, I think, was a first-timer, and Diary of a Teenage Girl. So there's a lot of first-timers who really made some strong stuff. He'd written some stuff. But anyway.
Yeah, I think he's 28 Days Later and a couple other things. But sci-fi movies, it's his debut feature.
Yeah.
And you get your Oscar Isaac.
Right.
You get your
Domhnall Gleeson,
who is in basically every movie this year, let's be honest.
Yeah.
At most of the movies we've listed, I've had Domhnall Gleeson.
He was in your favorite movie with the guy in the head.
Oh, Frank, yeah. Frank from last year. Yeah, Frank was one of the movies last
year. Which is a great, weird movie.
Frank's a great movie, and Ex Machina is really great. The effects in Ex Machina are
superb.
Really great. I mean, this really feels, and you know, you're saying, oh, this feels like Kubrick, but it really does, and I think that's by design, too. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this movie's intense. It's sci-fi, but it's not, you know, Transformers sci-fi. Mm-hmm. It's Twilight Zone sci-fi.
It's good. It's the good kind of sci-fi.
It's a good sci-fi.
Oscar Isaacs is phenomenal.
Yeah,
and
he's great.
I think Oscar Isaacs is really kind of coming into his own as one of the top actors in show business.
And
right
both
now.
Of these got two of those guys in Star Wars too.
Yeah.
Domhnall and so, Oscar Isaac.
Well, you know, they got to pay the bills.
Yeah.
Both of these guys have action figures of them out there on the shelves somewhere.
Yeah.
But Ex Machina is great. It is the best kind of sci-fi. It's thought-provoking and challenging. Yeah. It's a little character piece. Mm-hmm. It's just Domhnall Gleeson goes up to the home of this reclusive tech billionaire.
Yeah.
And
he's kind of a Zuckerberg type kind of guy. Yeah.
And he's been doing some experiments with robotics. And let's leave it at that.
AI.
Yes. And
artificial intelligence.
And it's a little bit of a chess game between the guys. And it's disturbing. The end of this movie doesn't.
Oh yeah, it's something else.
Happy
you know, it's a science fiction short story. That's sort of what it is.
It works brilliantly as a movie.
No, it is. But I'm saying, like, as far as it's not like some, you know, War of the Worlds. It's an intense 2-3 character drama, really.
Right.
And it works well. Alicia Vikander, gorgeous. Look at her in this movie.
It could have easily been real claustrophobic and felt limited. But I think the direction's great. Visually, you're right. The effects work on the
Yeah, I mean, as good effects as
on
you're
the robots
ever gonna see,
is amazing.
Yeah,
and it's just tense. It's like a thriller. It's a thought piece. It's a sci-fi movie. Yeah. It's all good. It's a great
movie.
And
I believe Ex Machina is now on Amazon Prime. So if you want to see it,
check that out.
Check it out on Amazon Prime. It's great. It's really one of the best movies of the year. Great acting, great writing, visuals, yeah. effects, the whole thing. It's got the whole package. And again, it's a little movie. Not a lot of people saw. But now that you can see it for nothing, and now you go like, oh, it's Poe Dameron. Now you can watch it and
yes.
know that, like, hey,
Poe Dameron.
This is what he was doing before Star
Wars. Well, Oscar Isaacs did an HBO miniseries called Show Me a Hero,
okay,
which was terrific. Hmm. And I don't know if anybody saw that.
I didn't, but...
It was about integrated housing developments in Newark in the 80s.
No, it sounds...
I know.
It's like a blast.
Doesn't sound good, but yeah. it's terrific. Yeah. It's really good. And Oscar Isaacs is phenomenal in that. It's about just like the intensity of small town politics. And I'm going to say something I never said before.
What's that?
Jim Belushi is great in that.
Oh, movie. My God.
No.
What are we doing in this world?
Show me here. Jim Go Belushi. Look for that. All right.
Okay. But yeah, Ex Machina is great. It's Corey's number 5. It was my number 3. So I guess I got to give you a number 4 for me, which was a little tiny indie film, Corey. A little tiny.
Uh-huh.
You probably never heard of this. It's called The Revenant.
Okay.
Of course, not a tiny indie movie. Leonardo DiCaprio, Tom Hardy, Domhnall Gleeson.
Yeah, it's again.
In The Revenant. Yeah. Will Poulter, who's the kid from We're the Millers. He's actually a British actor,
right.
but he's a real funny-looking guy. You know him from We're the Millers. He's got a nice role in this. Alejandro González Iñárritu, who made Birdman. Let me digress. Let me take 10 seconds. Let me take 10 seconds. Birdman, you can fucking blow me. I hated your fucking movie. The only people who liked it were people who thought they were intellectual hipsters. It was a piece of fucking shit. It didn't deserve one fucking Oscar.
Wow.
That movie can be buried in a hole and throw away the fucking shovel. But you know what? Revenant's really good.
Wait, you didn't like Keaton?
I Keaton's good. That movie's no good. The movie's no good.
Okay, I'm a little...
Birdman's overrated. All right. It stinks.
I'm with you that it's overrated, and I think it got a little overpraised, but I don't think it's completely worthless.
I disliked it. Right. The jazz music every fucking minute. Oh, I want to throw up.
Which jazz music was more annoying, that or Whiplash?
Whiplash and
Whiplash
great jazz
used
music.
The music great.
That was both of our best movies last year, Whiplash. How dare you? How dare you?
I know, I'm just saying.
Don't insult Whiplash.
No, I'm just saying compare this.
The Blu-ray sitting on the shelf behind you. I can hear you, Corey.
I'm saying compare the music between the two.
No, Whiplash was great. Birdman, annoying. Revenant, actually really good. I don't know. Did you see Revenant?
I'm going to sadly admit I did not.
No, it's great. It's really good. And you know, when you say Iñárritu to me, I go, I don't want to see this. But I got all these Oscar nominations. And,
well,
you know.
All of the feelings I have for David O. Russell.
Yeah.
I have in reverse. For that,
no, I'm sure.
For that fucking tortilla eaten hump.
I felt the same way, but this is good. I'm telling you, Revenant is good, okay? Look, first of all, I'm a sucker for any guy trying to survive. That movie, the guy surviving, I don't care if it's Life of Pi.
It's a man versus nature.
It's if it's Castaway, if it's any of these. I mean,
what was the Redford one? All Hope Is Lost.
I haven't seen that one yet, but okay. Contiki, where the guys built the raft and went across the ocean. Mm-hmm. I love all of that stuff, and this is
Jeremiah
exactly,
Johnson.
That I don't know either.
With Robert Redford.
The Revenant is, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio left for dead in the woods, you know, by his trapper buddies, and it turns into, you know, a revenge movie, and it takes place in the 1820s. You know, it's the trappers, it's like this trapping company, and they're at war with the Indians, and the Indians are at war with the French, and it's this whole thing, and it's shot really well. I mean, it's really beautifully done. But one thing that the director came out and said, I was reading some press about it, where he goes, well, there's no CG in my movie. This fucking movie got more CG than fucking Star Wars.
Yeah, sure.
But he does it in a way that it's blending,
there
was it's
CG
natural.
In Birdman,
right,
too.
Birdman, they made all those single shots out of different shots in CG. So he's full of shit. And of course, you know, there's the famous bear attack in this, and the bear CG, and there's a herd of buffalo that's CG, and there's an avalanche that's CG. So there's a lot of CG in this, but it's all really, really well done. I really like The Revenant. It's long. It's I think a little over two and a half hours. And Leo definitely, he's nominated for Best Actor, and he really deserves it. As much as I like some of these other guys as Best Actor, Leo goes through some shit in this. I mean, you can't, when you're like, you know, wading through water in like the Canadian wilderness where they shot this, you know, when you're wading through on your hands and knees, in what must be, you know, 40-degree water.
You know,
it's pretty amazing. It's tough to do. So
I will get around to this before the Oscars.
Yeah,
I just didn't get around to it.
No, it's really good. You'll dig it.
But I will say, if Leo does win,
yeah,
I'm not going to begrudge him anything because it's Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah.
He's done the work.
Been in a lot of good
things. He's in The Departed. He's done a lot of great films.
Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah, absolutely. He's done the work. When you do this, well, not this year because somebody was better.
Yeah.
And I know that's how you should do the Oscars.
Yeah.
But Paul Newman didn't get a fucking Oscar.
Right, yeah. I mean, saying for the body of work, give it to Leo.
I mean, Paul, let that sink in about these stupid awards.
Yeah, I know.
Let this stupid...
Alfred Hitchcock never won a directing award.
Paul fucking Newman.
But it's really great. Tom Hardy is also nominated for Best Supporting Actor. If I have a critique, and I know you've probably said this about Tom Hardy over the years, he's playing like a guy from Texas.
Yes.
And he lays on the Texas accent so thick you can barely understand him at times.
He
sometimes is a little too into it. I know he's method and all that stuff, but boy, Tom Hardy lays it on heavy in this movie. And I know he's kind of the villain in the piece and all that, but I think Tom Hardy's a little overrated in this. But overall, I thought the movie was really terrific. Beautiful visuals, great sound. Go see The Revenant. It's still in theaters, and it's definitely worth a look. I think Leo... You know, it may sweep. It may get director, best picture. It seems like it has a lot of momentum. And I wouldn't begrudge it because it's really good. So there's The Revenant, my number four movie. All right,
well,
Corey.
That's well done.
Give us a number.
Oh, I'm sorry. Newman did win one, but it was for The Color of Money.
Okay. So it was later.
But that was, he should have won for The Hustler and The Verdict. And
Scorsese didn't win for years, and then eventually they gave it to him. So,
all right. So if they give one to Leo, it's kind of a body of work
situation. If you see the movie, though, he is really good in the movie. So,
all right,
give us a number four.
What about the bear? Is he going to get that?
The bear is CG. Even though it's a good bear, is it as good as the tiger in Life of Pi? It's close.
It's a good tiger.
And I don't believe the bear ever fucks him.
No.
There's thought that the bear was
people
fucking him.
The
bear doesn't really fuck him. I think there's some sort of dominant where the bear sort of jumps on him. But no, there's no actual fucking.
What about the orangutan in Dawn of the Planet of the Apes?
Great. Well, those were great CGI
animals.
Great
CGI animal performance.
And the bear's on that level.
Now, this is not CGI, but this is puppets.
Number four?
Ladies and gentlemen, Anomalisa.
Okay.
From Charlie Kaufman and Duke Johnson.
Well, Corey, I want to give you the award for picking a movie that nobody's seen. There you go.
It is a movie nobody has
seen. As much as I picked a couple that
nobody's seen. It's currently in theaters.
Okay.
Can be seen if you want to go look for it.
If you knock three times on the door with no label on it.
It's playing at art house theaters. It is unlike pretty much anything either. It's a weird goddamn movie. I'm not going to, okay, it's Charlie. It's stop motion animation. Okay, and stop motion animated puppets.
Yeah,
it involves graphic puppet sex.
Okay,
including cunnilingus with puppets, which I believe is a first time.
That could be
lifelike puppets, although they're still puppets. So
yeah,
they look like Jerry Anderson Super Marionation, like Thunderbirds.
Okay,
in terms of they're not like their scale.
It's
they look
Team
like,
America World Police.
It's Team America World Police, but like in the most incredibly depressing, sad little story, which actually you might be able to relate to because it's about a guy on the road in a hotel room.
Okay.
Bored out of his mind.
Well, that used to be me.
Yeah. And you know.
Actually, I still once in a while I'm on the road and bored in a hotel, but less than before.
You and I know that sensation.
Yeah, we
haven't
do.
Done comedy for years. And it's really. It's there's only three people in it.
Okay.
There's only three voices. It's David Thewlis, Tom Noonan. Because here's the thing, the lead character, pretty everyone he sees, he can't distinguish between anyone else.
Okay.
Everybody from the bellhop to the bartender to the waitress to everybody to the cab driver all have the same face.
Okay.
It's a real surrealistic kind of until he meets the Jennifer Jason Leigh character and she comes alive for him. It's kind of like an inversion of the Manic Pixie Dream Girl.
Yeah.
In that he's forcing on her traits and characteristics she doesn't really have. It's a wonderful, weird, disturbing Charlie Kaufman movie. Which is what that guy does.
Okay.
I did not like Schenectady, New York, or whatever the fuck that was called.
Yeah.
That was too pretentious for me, but some of his other films, Adaptation, Eternal Sunshine, Spotless Mind, are some of my favorite movies.
Yeah, it's nominated for Best Animated Feature Film. I haven't seen Anomalisa, but it's playing now, so go see that.
The weird thing is the guy who did it is like from Starburns Company, which is Dino Stampopoulos. And they did like Moral Oral and some of these shows. So he's like he did like the stop motion episodes of Community.
Okay.
That's where Duke Johnson comes in. But it's brilliantly weird. It's like it's a weird. It's a strange movie. It's an art house movie. I'm a pretentious shit. I don't care.
Yeah, well, I haven't seen it. Not because I don't want to see that. I would watch that. But I just, again, I didn't get to it. I wasn't going to go through all the best animated features because I'd have to see something called Boy in the World, the Shaun the Sheep movie, and When Marnie Was There. That seemed like a little too much work for me, and Inside Out, which I already saw anyway. You got to give us a number three because you burned my number three on Ex Machina.
You burned my number two.
Well, give me a three, and then
here's
I'll give
another
you a two.
Fun.
You give me a three, I'll give you a two. You give me a one,
I'll give you
a two. I'll give you 50 cents back and a shave.
Hey, now.
And a copy of today's paper. Give me a number three.
Maroon. Look, hey. I'm going to give you number three, another fun, uplifting film. Room.
Room.
Should we even describe the plot of this one?
I've seen Room. I can describe it if you don't want to. It's a story of basically, I think it's really taken from these news stories about like the woman that was captured that was kidnapped in California as a teenager, and she had to live in the backyard of this guy's house and ended up having children with him and stuff. So that's what happens in Room. There's a woman, and we see her and her child. And it turns out she was kidnapped and has to live in a single room in the backyard of this guy's backyard with her kid. And it's their attempt to escape from him. And it goes on from there. You don't want to ruin Room for anyone.
No.
But it takes place in one room for the most part. And it is this mother and son.
The child is born in... She was abducted as a teenager. And this guy... Builds a storage shed basically for them to live in.
Yeah,
and the kid is born, and then she kind of hides the kid in the closet, but he knows there's
the kid. She doesn't let the kid and the kidnapper interact at all.
But the child doesn't know what the world is outside of that room.
That's what crushes you.
The room
movie,
is the entire universe for this kid, and so he's created every object in the room.
But they have like a television, and the kid thinks the people live inside the television and stuff.
Yes. He doesn't get that the people in the TV, that there's a world outside of the TV.
Yeah. It's really sad that way.
It's a powerful movie.
Yeah, it is.
It really is a gut-wrenching movie.
It's nominated for Best Picture. It's Best Director, actually, as well. Lenny Abramson, who made Frank.
The guy who made Frank.
Which I loved.
Yes.
And I actually like Frank more than Room, but I'll get into that. And Brie Larson for Best Actress. She won the SAG Award.
Mm-hmm.
She's probably the front runner for the Oscar. She's nominated.
Brie Larson's great.
Yeah, she's great in this.
She did a movie absolutely no one saw called Short Term 12.
Yeah.
Which is also wonderful.
Okay, I didn't see that one. By the way, she was a teen actress, and after I saw Room, I looked her up, and she made an L. In fact, you want to hear some Brie Larson? She made like a teen pop record a la Britney Spears.
Yeah, let's break this slog up.
Do you want to play a little Brie Larson? My problem with Room, if there was a problem, and it's why it didn't quite make my top 15, was that I thought that the second hour was a letdown. Now, I don't want to say what happens between the first hour and the second hour.
Yeah,
it
does move in a different direction.
But
than the
I didn't
half.
Like the second hour in that way. Otherwise, I thought this was probably almost like as good as like Gone Girl. But I thought that the second hour was a little bit let down, so it didn't.
Well, it kind of hits a mid film climax that it's hard to recover from. But I thought that the second half had a lot of merit too, and a lot of powerful stuff in it.
Well, I got to get this to play through the damn.
Hey, we'll figure it out eventually.
Yeah, we'll get this. We'll get this working. This is called "Straight Out of PE." Brie Larson's album from 2005. You interested in this at all? Do you want another cut? I don't know.
Yeah, this is pretty weak.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's her doing Mandy Moore or something. I mean, it's not.
Do you have some bread?
I do have bread, but we let's do the title track. Finally,
Dan Fogelberg, some other crappy.
Well, it's just funny that now she's this she's this Oscar nominated actress, and she made this crappy album because she was, you know, a teen star. And they make you sing.
I'm late again. Got a low grade.
Room much better than Straight Out of PE. But there's Brie Larson singing for you.
You hate me. That's why you don't.
Wow. Do you want to hear a track called Ugly?
Yeah, go ahead.
Or Invisible Girl?
This shit is weak.
Yeah. I mean, I listened to this for like
some weak
songs.
Well, this sounds like every, like,
it sounds like every teen pop star.
Overproduced, like Demi Lovato.
All right, enough Brie Larson. But anyway, she was a teen actress. She's really good in Room. I liked it. But again, I was let down a little bit by the end at this. Even though it's great when it's great, when it's not great, that's why I didn't put it in my top 15. But yeah, I could see where Room, and it got all the nominations, and it deserves them. It's good. So,
All right,
that's Room. All right, let me give you a number two movie. Your number two was Spotlight, so you're down to one movie.
Yep.
My number two, I might even hit your number one right here. I don't know.
Probably going to do it.
It's also Oscar nominated for Best Picture, and it's called A little quiet little thing. If you want to get intimate, if you want to have a quiet night,
show's
in,
over. We if you want to hit my number one.
If you want to have a quiet night in where you can just mellow out and relax, get Mad Max Fury Road.
There you go.
Which I figured out because I know we both like Mad Max. We talked about it on this show when it came out. Mad Max was great. Here's the thing about Mad Max: not everybody's going to like Mad Max Fury Road. It was nominated for a Best Picture and Best Director. It's now playing on HBO. If you want to see it that way. But here's the thing about Mad Max that makes it, of all the summer movies, of all the blockbuster action movies, that's why this is. You'll never make a better Max movie than this.
No.
You know, there were Mad Max movies before, and then there's this one, which is the greatest Mad Max movie you could have. It so perfectly does what it wants to do.
And I thought the Road Warrior from 82 with Mel Gibson was perfect for that kind
of
movie.
But this movie,
and you'll never get better than that.
From the acting to the stunts, to the photography, to the sound. If you saw this in a theater, it like blew your ears out and your eyes. It was amazing.
It's
a feast for the senses.
It's just 2 hours of insanity.
It's insanity, yeah. Because
the entire visual world that they create in this thing, and the allegorical stuff, and you've got this crazy demagogue general who's got this plastic chess piece and this big ventilator mask, and they're drinking breast milk to get strong.
Right. It's
just this weird, crazy stuff.
And the thing about like the actors, and not so much, you know, it's Tom Hardy,
Morton Joe.
Charlize Theron is the lead actress. But the thing about it is, you know, when you, because I was watching some of this on HBO the other night, you know, so seeing it for the second time, and it was just like, you know, these guys don't feel like stunt guys in makeup. Like a Batman movie or something.
Yeah.
These guys feel like, oh my God, I'm in the desert and there's these fucking crazy people trying to kill us. That's what it feels like. It feels like a documentary about guys racing through the desert in a post-apocalyptic future. That's what makes this movie work, is that there's no winks to the camera. There's no attempts to be funny. There's no humor. It's just intense.
There's a little tiny bit of humor in the way they do in Mad Max movies.
But it's really intense. Yeah. It's really hardcore. Again, it ain't for everybody.
The first shot of the movie is Max steps on a lizard and eats it.
Yeah,
like that's the first shot.
It's crazy great.
Tom Hardy spends the first 35, 40 minutes. He gets captured and he's tied up. And used to drain his blood.
Yeah, he becomes like a blood bag for these other. Yeah,
and they got him rigged up to the front of these cars.
Yeah, it's so well done that you just can't.
Nuts.
It's hard to hate it because it almost feels a little like Blade Runner in that, you know how Blade Runner was so well done that it didn't feel like a movie. It felt like a real world that you were in, and that's
what this
does.
Actually has a story that unlike Blade Runner.
Yeah.
It has a story
where
you can care about somebody, and it's compelling.
It ultimately just comes about, let's drive really fast and get away from these guys, and we'll try to kill them when they try to kill us, and it's just amazing. And,
it's a pretty elemental story in that basic way, but the design, everything in this, every weird little freaky moment and all the, you know, it's these weird sexualized rituals of birth and death and Charlize Theron is amazing in it as Furiosa. She's like the lead.
Right. Tom Hardy hardly says anything in this movie. He's kind of along for the ride in a way.
He
kind of
drives the truck and occasionally punches somebody.
He's the muscle.
Yeah. He doesn't really...
And it has really no connection to the other Mad Max movies, I don't think, in terms of any linear plot. It's just another episode of the Adventures of Mad Max.
It's like a Western where, like, it's like a Western TV show or like Kung Fu.
Yeah.
Where, like, Max rides into town.
Yeah.
Or what passes for a town.
Yeah.
In these movies and gets into some hijinks and some shit and then moves on.
Yeah.
I saw it at the drive-in. which I thought was appropriate and was the best place to see
Although
it.
Although I saw it on that giant screen over at the at the theater by you where we saw Star Wars.
The sound would just blow you out of the room.
The sound was amazing. I mean, it was something else. I mean, I remember I went with Heather, my ex-girlfriend, and she was like covering her eyes at points because it was just so intense. Like, it was just crazy. So, Mad Max Fury Road, very well
done. Just on a technical level, it's phenomenal in a way that no other movie can come close
to
this
year. And it's the same guy.
But the story is good.
It has a story,
And like I'm saying,
feminist and it's pro-woman. Yeah,
there's all this layered allegorical stuff in there on top of the fact that you've got guys in modified, crazy, hacked up dune buggies that are kitbashed together on these like 40-foot tall bamboo poles swinging onto like oil tankers.
Yeah, it's something
else, insane.
Man. It's something, and it's George Miller, who made the other Mad Max movies, and has recently been making movies like Happy Feet, really stupid childhood drivel, and I think he made Babe, too, didn't he, George Miller? But he made all these, but boy, Mad Max Fury Road, and a lot of people, I remember when this was coming out, and I was like, I think Mad Max is going to be good, and everyone was like, Avengers, and I was like, no, I think this Mad Max is going to be the movie of the summer, and now no one even cares about
it. I've been reading comic books since before I could read, and know the Avengers like the back of my. I couldn't tell you really.
Yeah.
I forgot what the plot of the Avengers was.
I know. I can't.
There's a robot.
Yeah.
And they all get.
Avengers, and I was going to talk about it later, but it was like, Avengers was like, it was like, tell me about the pizza you had last May, Corey. Mm-hmm. Can you remember that pizza that you got from Hungry Howie's? You can't. You were just like, you ate the pizza. It was fine. You enjoyed the pizza. It was good. It served its purpose. But you couldn't tell me anything about that, And that's kind of what Avengers was. It was fast food.
Which I enjoyed the hell out of the first Avengers.
Right. I enjoyed the fuck out of a Hungry Howie's pizza.
But this was
Tell you about it later,
Okay, Mad Max, you cannot forget.
It's unforgettable. It's
a
great.
Fantastic film, Mad Max Fury Road.
And if you didn't see it in the theater, you missed out a little bit,
you
too.
You kind of blew it.
And I know people, I've heard people who are going, I saw it on HBO, and it's not as great as everyone was saying. And it's like, yeah, because it's just not the same fucking experience.
No, you got to see it in the theater.
It's not the same experience.
It was pure cinema.
Yeah,
great. Right.
So here it is. We're down to my number one movie of the year, Corey.
All right there.
It's come down to this.
Yes.
And like I said, this was not a year of fun movies. And again, my number one movie, not a ton of fun. But this is heartwarming. It is uplifting. It has a message.
Nicholas Sparks.
Yes. It is called...
It's called Divergent Insurgent. No?
The Notebook 3, The Case of the Wet Panties.
That's right.
That's not what it's called. It's a documentary, my number one movie. Probably the first time I've put a documentary as my number one. Mm-hmm. But it's a movie. I've talked about it on the show in the past. I don't know if you saw it. You certainly had the opportunity. It's on Netflix. It's called An Honest Liar, a documentary about the amazing James Randi.
I did see it.
Yeah, and it's great.
It's a good flick.
And here's the thing about it. Not only is, look, I love magic. I'm an amateur hack magician and a historian, and I love magic. And James Randi's a giant figure in that world. He's a giant figure as a debunker of, different psychics and preachers and these kind of faith healers and these people. And all of that's in the movie. But then there's another thing, which I don't even want to get into. There's an element to this movie, which if I tell you about it, I think it's going to ruin it. But, boy, it surprised me. Having been a huge fan of James Randi and not knowing that element of it, and basically, you have the guy who is the world's most honest man who has only gone out to debunk these faith healers, and that expose in there of the guy who was wearing the earpiece and, doing all that. That's an amazing sequence.
Sure.
And really eye-opening. But when you
I
see
love,
him...
I love the guy that This was like in the 70s on like the Mike Douglas show or Merv Griffin or something. There's a guy that was like, I can move the pages of this phone book with his mind. And he's blowing on the pages.
Well, but you know what? That guy, there's a lot of YouTube stuff with that guy because I've seen that. I'd seen that before. And there's interviews with that guy where he describes how he learned the technique. Like he was in prison for 10 years. And he learned how to like move objects by blowing on them without moving his lips. Mm-hmm. It's pretty crazy. But Randy busts him. But, you know, the thing about it is, you know, here is this most honest guy in the world. And he's been lying to everybody for this big hunk of his life. And that's sort of what the big reveal is. And it was really moving. And it was something that you don't have to be a fan of magic to like this movie. You don't have to be a fan of, truth tellers and what would you call these people? Rationalism, you know. You don't have to be a fan of that. Yeah skeptics. Because what this movie really comes down to, you know, you see a lot of movies that have an issue behind them. And this movie, in one way, is the best movie about that issue. And yet it's not about that issue at all. It's just about two people. And it's really wonderful. And I loved it. I saw it twice.
Well,
because I watched it with a friend after I saw it the first time.
I think you might be a little in the tank before it as from the magic fan aspect of it.
But that's not what made it great.
I thought it was good.
Not what made it great.
I thought it was good. I just didn't put it in my 15
because
for the you know. But
well, there was a magic documentary a couple of years ago called Ricky J. Which was a great documentary about magic, but it doesn't have this other element to the story that the Randy story has. And that's, I think, what makes it so great. Mm-hmm. And it's all there in the title, too, The Honest Liar. So it's
I thought it was
amazing.
A good film.
Moving, the whole thing.
Not slamming it. I think you just might have meant more to you.
Well, look, I didn't
as
like
a fan
I
of Randy.
Look, you will continue to bag on me because I didn't like Joy. And that's not fair. That's not fair, Corey.
I didn't say I didn't like this movie. I'm saying you might have liked it a little more.
Clearly I did because it was my number one movie of the year. But again, I thought the movies kind of bummers this year.
Well, yeah,
you know, they
kind
of were.
Well, look, 12 Years a Slave. Anybody gonna want to watch that in a year?
No. Every year they give you these fucking Oscar bait things. We'll get to these in a second. But yeah, every year they give you this Oscar bait garbage that you got to sit through. Like last year was Still Alice. Whatever that fucking movie was, 5 days, 4 nights with the woman.
Sure.
Oh my God, don't even watch those. I will get to those. Let me give you the good documentary, speaking of documentaries, that I saw this year that didn't make my top 15. The Look of Silence is a follow-up to a movie called The Act of Killing by Joshua Oppenheimer. It's like a semi-sequel. It takes place about the Indonesian genocide that took place in the 50s. It's another look at that. It's nominated for Best Documentary. It's really well done. You should see it. I don't know where you see it now, but you can see it. Cartel Land is also Oscar-nominated for Best Documentary. It was very good. It's on Netflix. It's about the Mexican drug cartels and the vigilante groups that tried to fight them, and the good guys fight the bad guys, but sometimes the police are the bad guys. It's a whole feud, and that's really well done. That's on Netflix. What Happened Miss Simone was also Oscar nominated for Best Documentary. The life story of Nina Simone, you can see it on Netflix. Very good. Didn't make my top 15, but not a big Nina Simone guy, but it's an interesting story. She was She had some issues in her life.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if you saw that one or not, but What Happened Miss Simone was interesting. Amy, the story of Amy Winehouse, was nominated for Best Documentary.
That was pretty good.
I actually don't recommend you see Amy, and here's why.
It's a little bit of a bummer.
Well, it's watching a person commit suicide, essentially.
Yes.
It's watching a person kill themselves. And what's best about that Amy documentary, and it probably the front runner to win the Best Documentary Oscar, probably, but seeing her as a teenager when she was like full of life and singing, and that was all great. And then it's just a downhill spiral, and it's real.
Well,
sad.
On a similar note, I don't either really recommend either Montage of Heck.
Yeah, the Kurt Cobain movie,
which
is like
really
that too,
depressing.
I have that in my top 10
to watch a guy
documentaries that were in my 15.
But to watch a guy everybody loved tear himself apart.
Yeah, that I have that on there as well. I had Call Me Lucky on there. The Wrecking Crew. It's on Netflix now.
I thought
it's
that
good.
Was decent.
Yeah, it's good. Again, this is not my. These are just other good documentaries. Yeah. There's a documentary called 3.5 Minutes, 10 Bullets that's on HBO. It was on the Oscar shortlist where they do a 15 movie shortlist for the documentaries. Mm-hmm. So I tried to see all of those as well. This one's on HBO. It's about the guy who shot the black white guy shot black teenagers for playing music too loud at a gas station.
Oh, sounds good.
And that trial, yeah, it's about it's fun too. But it's called 3.5 Minutes, 10 Bullets. Listen to Me, Marlon.
Yeah,
the Marlon Brando one, which I've talked about on the show. That's on Showtime. That was on the Oscar shortlist. That's really good. And another great documentary, which was also made by Alex Gibney, the guy who made Going Clear. He made a documentary about Steve Jobs called Steve Jobs, Man and the Machine, which was really well done.
Okay.
It's kind of the, you know, it slams Steve Jobs in a way. It's sort of to demystify him. Very well done. I thought even better than the Steve Jobs movie, which was pretty good, the Steve Jobs movie that came out this year with Michael Fassbender.
I had that,
we both liked.
I had that on my near miss list.
Near miss, yeah.
Because that movie, Aaron Sorkin, great writer.
Yeah.
Up there with the Coens and Charlie
Danny
Kaufman.
Boyle, great director.
In terms of dialogue. But there was a the problem with that movie was the structure.
Yeah.
And there were a couple characters in that, like Steve Wozniak.
Yeah.
His character, it's like was like an SNL sketch because they had Seth Rogen playing it.
Yeah.
And based on Steve Jobs is like a three-tiered structure where it kind of repeats itself.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a play.
Yeah.
He's giving the pitch demonstrations for each new Mac.
Yeah.
And it's the iPhone and the Mac, the Apple II and the Mac. Anyway.
Yeah.
No, the Mac.
It's the first Mac.
The first Mac.
And then I think it's the next computer, which
is
the thing
he
did after.
The other thing.
And then he's unveiling the iPhone at the end of the movie. Yeah.
But each time Steve Wozniak's character shows up and goes, "You need to acknowledge the Apple II gene."
Yeah, that got annoying.
That shit annoyed the
hell out of me. Well, the whole thing got annoying because the daughter kept coming back. And it felt, you know what it felt like? It felt like Birdman to me a little bit. And it all took place backstage at a theater, and it was a lot of walking and talking. And, you know, the Fassbender's good. He didn't really capture Steve Jobs for me until he got into sort of that classic Steve Jobs outfit. Then I sort of bought him more. But, yeah, Steve Jobs was pretty good. He's nominated for Best Actor. I guess, but Man of the Machine is a great documentary. I don't know where you see that now. You probably have to rent it digitally or on DVD. But let me give you some of my other best movies here.
I had two documentaries.
Oh, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
Best of Enemies about Gore Vidal
and
William F.
One.
Buckley.
Okay.
And that's really just juicy and fun about the fight between those guys. And they talk about basically these guys were super high-end intellectuals, and they even talk in a way they have that very sort of, you know, pronunciation and this sort of receipt.
Yeah.
And quite high-toned in a way we don't do anymore.
Yeah.
But they said basically those two had debates at the 68 Democratic Convention on ABC because ABC didn't have the money to cover the conventions properly. So they just let those guys talk for 20 minutes a night.
Yeah.
And they basically lay out the case that opened up the entire world of punditry and talking heads that we have now.
Well, you know, they it's funny. Those guys were kind of the same guy. They were two sides of the coin. They were diametrically opposed politically, and yet they were both these highfalutin assholes. You know what I mean?
Well, in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
That's a really, really interesting
I haven't seen that.
Documentary.
And what else you got?
And one called The Death of Superman Lives.
Oh, yeah, I haven't seen that.
Which, in the category with that canon movie, this is a case of a movie that didn't get made. It's about the aborted attempt from Tim Burton to make a Superman
movie. Is that on Netflix now, or where do you
see that? It's on Showtime.
Oh, is it? Okay, I need to see that. Yeah.
So that's wildly weird, entertaining. Like, they were gonna do what?
Yeah.
And you get all the production designs and all kinds of behind the scenes about why that didn't work, and you get about what a weirdo John Peters is, the producer. So that was a lot.
Well, I had Jodorowsky's Dune, which was kind of the same thing about how Jodorowsky tried to make Dune. And then there's something called Lost Soul, which was the making of Dr. Moreau, which I saw the other night. I think it was from 2015, where they talked about the 1997.
It's a little sub. There's Man of
It's becoming
Lost in La Mancha.
Is like
there's
that.
Like a failed movies
failed
get
movie.
Their own documentary.
Yeah.
But anyway,
all right, and let's go through some other good movies. The Martian. Which did you see? The Martian.
Yeah.
Or no?
Yeah,
it was good. Here's my knock on The Martian. First hour by Kubrick. Second hour by Michael Bay. It really let itself down in a way that
The Martian
I didn't
was
like.
A fine little movie.
Yeah.
It was, I mean, not little. It was a big movie.
Yeah, it made a ton of money.
It was cute. It was nice.
Yeah.
But it didn't elevate to another level for me.
No, I liked it. Again, I liked the man surviving in the, you know, I love that element. But it's like, how do we rescue him? well, we've got this spaceship full of A-list actors we could send back to get him. Maybe we'll do that. Okay. So that was The Martian. It got a ton of Oscar nominations. Matt Damon should really win, if not for Leo. I would say Matt Damon deserves that.
Well,
I had Big Short on there. Brooklyn is nominated for Best Picture with Saoirse Ronan as Best Actress.
Yeah.
Look, here's a good movie that's absolutely, this is for girls. Brooklyn's good. It's for girls. You can watch it, guys. It's not terrible. It's good. It's just absolutely for girls. It's about a woman who immigrates to Ireland and can't decide between the Ireland boyfriend, paid by the magic Wade, Dom Hall Gleason.
That's right, Dom Hall Gleason.
Say the magic Wade.
That's right.
And or she can't decide between the American boyfriend and the Irish boyfriend. It's for girls, but it's pretty good. I think I'm kind of going through the Oscar stuff here now. A Carol with Cate Blanchett nominated for Best Actress and Rooney Mara for Best Supporting Actress. It's a lesbian love story that takes place in the 50s. You know, again, you don't really need to see this. It was well done for what it is. Cate Blanchett looks hot, which is actually important to the plot because she has to convince this shop girl, you know, Rooney Mara, to fuck her. And so, you know, Cate Blanchett has to look good in it. And it is. It's got a couple twists and turns. Not a lot of drama, but Doug
Benson said, this is a lesbian film where the most erotically charged scene is where one of them says, I like your hat.
Well, there is a lot of, you know, it's funny, like, you know, they're lesbians. They get together, but like they don't have sex for like a couple of weeks. It's weird. You do see both of their tits, which, not to turn into Joe Bob Briggs, but, you know.
Well, that's four
breasts.
Yeah,
there's four breasts.
And, how many beasts?
No beasts, a couple of breasts, yeah. Little gunplay.
Gratuitous.
You know, it's what's the name of this guy who made this? Todd Haynes, I think, is the guy. Yeah. He's a gay guy. He makes a lot of gay friendly stuff. You don't really need to see Carol. It was well done, but you don't need to see that. 45 Years has Charlotte Rampling getting a Best Actress nomination.
Charlotte Rampling, who says it's racist against white people.
Well, yeah, but here's the thing. 45 Years is a movie. It's about a husband and wife who are celebrating their 45th anniversary. Mm-hmm. And it's really just a little character study of them hanging out in their house and going on walks in the English countryside. And, of course, the husband has something in his past come back. It's really not a lot of drama, but it's funny that it is.
How does it stack up against Little Nicky?
Is it
as good as that?
Here's the thing. They come off as real people, and that's what's great about it is it's just, there's almost no acting. It just feels like you're watching two real people.
So kind of like Adam Sandler and Drew Barrymore in Blended.
It's exactly two real people.
It's very real.
Remember when he was the water boy for the football team, how that felt real? That's how this feels. But 45 Years, I don't recommend everyone go out and watch this, but it was better than I thought considering, this was one of those that I sat down and tortured myself to watch. Adam Sandler
did make one of my favorite romantic comedies ever, which is Punch Drunk Love.
Okay.
Which is Paul Thomas Anderson showing that a great director can make something out of any pile of shit.
I'll admit to liking Funny People.
Okay.
Which Adam Sandler was in. So there you go.
All right, there you go.
And The Longest Yard Can Blow Me. All right, but so 45 Years.
I'm waiting for someone to make Kevin James into something. Is there a great director that can make Fatty Fall Down Go Boom into something interesting?
Paul Blart. Child advocate. I don't know. What is the
Francis Ford Coppola? Is there any?
What about Paul Blart in the Australian post-apocalyptic wilderness?
Yeah, that'd be good.
He's on his Segway. Sure. There's guys trying to kill him. No. All right. Creed, which is about the son of Apollo Creed, was well done. The director is the guy who made Fruitvale Station.
Ryan Coogler.
With Michael B. Jordan, who plays the boxer in this. Stallone gets a Best Supporting
Michael
Actor.
Michael B. Jordan.
Stallone got a Best Supporting Actor nomination, and I'm going to ruin Creed in a little bit. Here's what Stallone, because I go, when I was seeing this, I go, boy, Stallone must do something amazing. So in the story, Rocky's training this kid to be a great boxer, and Rocky turns out gets cancer. And I go, well, Stallone's going to diet and do this whole De Niro thing and lose weight. Here's what he does. He puts on a stocking cap and gets 3 days' growth of beard.
Yeah.
That's Rocky getting cancer. It's really not.
And he coughs.
It's really not a great stretch for him. He's doing the same shit he always does. They gave him the Golden Globe, but, you know, the foreigners, that's all they care about.
Well, hey, look, Stallone's still alive.
Yeah, I mean, it was fine. Creed is a pretty good boxing movie. You know,
he didn't win for his work in Rhinestone with Dolly Parton, when are we going to give Sylvester a win?
But, you know, the boxing's well done in that because, you know, they bring the PTI guys in and you see, you know, the HBO boxing guys. They did it very realistic.
Oh, Jim Lampley, anytime there's a boxing movie,
yeah,
Jim Lampley is right there. anytime there's a movie with politics in it,
yeah,
you can get like Lawrence O'Donnell,
yeah,
or like the, you know,
used to get Chris, Larry King a lot.
Chris,
I don't know if you still do.
Chris Matthews will,
yeah, yeah, Chris
will do
Matthews.
Any political movie.
Yeah, exactly.
Those guys get ready.
So that was pretty good. And then some blockbusters I liked. We both like Star Wars: The Force Awakens. We did a whole show on that. That was good. I enjoyed Straight Outta Compton. It was not one of the best movies of the year,
no.
But I liked it. You know, it felt a little bit like that, you know, the TLC VH1 movie. It didn't feel a whole lot different than that.
It was
a biopic. You know, I lived through the NWA stuff, and it reminded me of that, so it was cool. Ant-Man was pretty good. You said that. Jurassic World was good. You know, Jurassic World is a lot like Star Wars. They kind of took the first movie and redid it. And so Jurassic World was good in that way. It was a nice blockbuster.
So people are bored with seeing dinosaurs. So we've engineered bigger dinosaurs.
Did you see Jurassic World? Or
I mean,
just...
what kind of a dumb
plot. Well, no, here they have, you know, they have a dinosaur that goes rogue.
Yes.
And what we do is they take the villainous velociraptors from the other movies.
And turn them into the good guys.
Well, because Chris Pratt trains them and they become good guys. So there's Jurassic World.
I know, but it's the whole Jurassic Park thinking when they make another sequel, you go... Oh, are you guys going to build... So the dinosaurs are out of control.
Well,
why don't we build a Death Star to rein in these dinosaurs?
Okay, now, at this point, Jurassic Park, The Lost World, and Jurassic Park 3 are no longer canon. Mm-hmm. So this movie is a direct descendant to the first Jurassic Park and not to the sequels. So if that makes it any better for you.
I like when they skip...
It does nothing.
I like when they skip the sequels.
They have no part. Minions... was a much better animated movie than Inside Out. I know you'll never watch Minions because you think it's for 3-year-olds. There were actually some intelligent like references to stuff that only adults would get in Minions. I know. You didn't see it. I saw it and I liked it. So
much
fuck
like,
you.
Much like
you got to see it, though. Don't criticize something you didn't see.
Much like you on the Kennedy assassination.
Don't criticize something you didn't
I will
see.
Never be moved on the Minions.
That's fine, but you didn't see it, and it was actually okay.
I saw the other two fucking
I know, but it's,
Despicable
it's,
Me movies.
Okay, but it was probably better than those, even. A couple big 3D spectacle movies, which won't translate at home, but were good. Everest was good. Nice ensemble cast in there. You got your Jake Gyllenhaal and some other guys.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, seeing that in 3D really made you feel like you were on Everest, which was good. The Walk was good in 3D at the theater. It was about the guy who walked between the World Trade Center.
How long is your list of runners up?
If you keep talking, it's only going to get longer. But Man on Wire is a documentary about the same topic. Probably a better movie than The Walk.
Yes.
But The Walk was good. Good comedies this year. Trainwreck was good. I think we both agree on that. We saw that. Believe it or not, Melissa...
I could have done without LeBron.
Spy was good with Melissa McCarthy. I know you don't want to acknowledge her, but Paul Feig did a pretty good spy movie.
I like Paul Feig.
And then put her in it, and it worked, so it was good.
Yeah, Jason Statham.
Here you go. Here's a fist fight. Kevin Hart and Josh Gad in The Wedding Ringer was actually funny. I know. Go ahead.
Well, good night, everybody.
I know.
See you later.
I know. And the other good movie I had, It Follows, was a good little indie horror movie.
Yeah, that was well received.
It's on Netflix. It was shot in Detroit. I actually had a diner I go to, believe it or not. It was the diner they go to. It was interesting. So now we're into our worst movies, our disappointing movies. Do you want to start? Do you have any bad things?
I'll just say this. This has been a year for me where I have seen fewer shitty movies than I've ever seen.
Well,
because I've spent the last 15 years in the hell of seeing movies that sucked.
Okay.
Without, against my will.
Yeah.
I've seen the depths of hell, like...
Yes, you have.
The Nut Job.
Absolutely.
Which was a squirrel heist movie.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen really bad stuff. This year, I only saw a couple bad things. One that I really... Mordecai.
Oh, God.
With Johnny Depp.
Yeah.
That was really just a...
Yes.
And there almost was a decent movie under there somewhere.
Yeah.
Buried under Johnny Depp's desperate, creaking attempt to be funny.
Is he trying to, is it trying to be Pink Panther or something? I
mean, yeah, he's doing this like Terry Jones kind of thing. Like, and it's just hideous. And he just sucks the life out of every scene.
Well, let me give you one of my movies in my disappointing category, which included Avengers and Joy, which we've talked about, and Inside Out. Black Mass with Johnny Depp. Everyone said, Johnny Depp is back. Black Mass. He plays it almost exactly as he played the guy in Dark Shadows. What the fuck is the matter with Johnny Depp? This black mask, don't bother with this.
Johnny Depp
thing.
Has lost his.
Don't bother his with black speech. Mask. People said it was good. It was not good. It was annoying.
Now I actually liked Dark Shadows, and I'm.
Yeah, I did too. I like Dark Shadows.
I'm actually one of the few that liked.
I like Dark Shadows, but this no. Mm-hmm. Black mask, skip. Okay, now let's carve out another hour of the show just when you thought you were going home.
Oh, God.
Because one of my most disappointing movies of the year, uh-huh. and I talked about it, he was in my assholes of the year mm-hmm. because The Hateful Eight by Quentin Tarantino.
No, wait, you're dropping that on me now?
I know, we're 2.5 hours
Holy
into the goddamn
shit,
show
we'll never get out of this.
Okay, look, if you liked Hateful Eight, if you liked it, if you're a guy that liked it, here's the thing that's the only reason you could possibly like this yeah. is you have to ignore that for 2 hours, absolutely fuck all, nothing happens. It bores the shit out of you. Mm-hmm. It's long shots of the fucking snow and a horse carriage and a Jesus Christ statue in a blizzard. It's the dullest dullards of movie. Now, if you want to say that because of that 2 hours of tension, the last 45 minutes is the payoff, you got a point. And the last 45 minutes is basically Reservoir Dogs, essentially, in the West in a cabin. And I like Reservoir Dogs, and I thought that that was interesting, but it has no respect for your time. It's too goddamn long. It's boring and annoying, and I can't ever recommend it.
The no respect for your time is a great point. It's because I think there's about 70% of a good movie in there.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's
I do actually think that
it's a Reservoir Dogs in the West.
But there's a couple tragic directorial flaws.
Oh, God.
He does an intermission.
Well, I didn't see the Roadshow version with the intermission, so I didn't have to get
after the intermission, he comes back and does narration.
Yes.
Which we're supposed to...
Oh, his narration was dire.
Tarantino, which I think was just Tarantino loving the sound of his own voice and his
own
words.
But I think it's because maybe he didn't make sense enough to people and he had to fill in the plot.
But it's so... Okay, I can follow the fucking plot of a Murder, She Wrote.
Yeah.
I don't need...
I know what you mean.
Your mystery...
Right.
Okay, his mystery involves... Let's have a guy who's in the basement who we don't refer to for the first 45 minutes.
Well, that gives
Pop,
some...
I'm sorry. That spoiler.
Well, it's... Oh,
all right, fuck the spoilers.
I don't care. It's a bunch of people in a room and somebody's got a secret. That's... Okay. Which is what Reservoir Dogs was.
There's a character that pops up out of nowhere.
Yeah, exactly.
Literally. And you go, that's bad writing when you don't even indicate the guy's there. Then there's then there's that flashback.
Yeah, which is annoying.
Which is annoying and pointless.
And he throws his girlfriend in there, which is like,
And that's when the movie I turned. I thought that, you know, one, Kurt Russell is chewing scenery.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm in there. That's fine. I'm good for that.
Yeah.
Jennifer Jason Leigh's spitting and cooing and doing all her shit. Fine. Bruce Dern's being a crazy old man.
Yeah.
Great. Michael Madsen standing around going, I'm Michael Madsen. No value in that
Anyone
character.
Remember me from Reservoir
right.
Dogs?
No fucking value in that character. No value in Tim Roth's character.
No.
So
but
of
Sam,
the of
but
the
Sam, Jacks, like, Sam Jackson getting a blowjob though that from a guy.
Well, that's awful.
That's like what the fuck is
that? That was just driven. You know what? And the problem I had with that was done not to change the action in the scene.
Yeah.
But to provoke the audience.
Well, that's Christopher.
That's the things I
didn't
like.
That's the like the scene where Christopher Walken talks about putting the watch up his ass in Pulp Fiction. They break away from the narrative to tell this other little story that's supposed to get you on Sam Jackson's side. And, you know, again, by the way,
you're right. That's maybe the worst part of Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
Because that as entertaining as Walken is and that little story is nice,
well,
it doesn't really move anything
but
along.
But it has to make the reason that's in there is because it has to make the watch important.
Mm-hmm.
Why would Bruce go back to the
Risk everything.
It's because of the watch that his father got. But yeah, I mean, Hateful Eight, look, I know you didn't like this, but here's the thing with Tarantino and me. I hated the last two movies. I hated Django. I hated Inglourious Bastards. I liked Hateful Eight better than that, but I still can't recommend it. It just does not respect your time. If this is a first-time director who makes a 100-minute movie out of Hateful Eight, then I'm for it. But when you make something that's 2 hours and 40 minutes, and you stomp your feet and you whine and cry about 70 millimeter, when you make a movie that takes place in a fucking carriage and a fucking log cabin, you gotta just get the fuck out of here. You're so far up your own ass.
But like I'm saying, like that scene with Sam Jackson was provoking the audience.
Yeah.
All of this, he's like, I'm going to force people to reinstall 70 millimeter projectors.
Yes.
Then I'm going to set the movie inside a cabin. Which is like,
I'm going to
make a a staged play. I'm gonna every scene is gonna be 3 minutes longer than it should be.
Yes.
I'm gonna elaborate on things.
Yeah.
I'm going to be a bad filmmaker in terms of over elaborating on things that you should be able to intuit from the fucking film.
Yeah. It's...
I'm gonna drop narration on top of things. All of which is to provoke you and make you think about the fact that you're watching a movie.
Yeah. Look, the knock on Tarantino forever has been he doesn't make movies about people, he makes movies about movies. And this is exhibit A in that 4-minute
shot of a statue covered in snow.
And I was in the cult of Tarantino in the 90s. I was into it. But look, he's driven me off with all these ridiculous movies. I'm sorry if I need a little reality in my pictures now. If I need a little humanity, I need something that speaks to the real world we live in. And this movie just doesn't have it. And I didn't even see the 70mm version, which is apparently 6 minutes longer.
I thought
6 minutes fucking longer and an intermission. Holy shit.
I thought he was getting to a point at something. What was frustrating about this movie, too, all of the things that I liked that he did in Django about rubbing our nose in slavery.
Yeah.
In this movie, it felt gratuitous and pointless. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, he seemed to be making a point.
People screaming the N-word for no reason.
Yeah.
I think I told you on the phone after I saw this, I said, he's never going to set a movie in present day because he won't get away with that many N-words. He has to set something.
Well, he did
back
in Jackie
period.
Brown.
Well, yeah, but that was then. I don't know if you can do it now. That was then.
Let me say they use it a lot in Pulp Fiction.
That was the 90s. It's not now. It was 20 years ago.
I'm with you. There was a major disappointment.
And then, you know, here's the two worst movies of the year that are absolutely bad that have no redeeming value. This one's an Oscar bait piece of shit. The Danish Girl with Eddie Redmayne. I'm convinced this is going to be like the new Showgirls. I know that they want you to think that this is a movie about a guy who wanted to have a sex change operation in the 1700s or whatever, and it's supposed to be real important. He is so campy in this. I mean, as campy as he was when he played the guy in the wheelchair? When he played Stephen Hawking, it was campy, but I liked that movie, The Theory of Everything. This fucking thing, he's so over the top, trying on women's panties and enjoying it. It's just, it's ridiculous. He's way over the top. Alicia Vikander, who we talked about from Ex Machina, is Oscar nominated for playing, his wife or whatever, and she's actually pretty good. But you can't take this movie seriously. It's completely ridiculous. It's over the top. It's silly. It just drags itself into the gutter with camp. It's not a serious movie. Please don't see this. Please don't see this. I know you know there's gay people and there's gay friendly people who are going to think, oh, I need to see this because it's about an issue that I care about. You don't need to see this. It is an insult. It is an insult to that issue. Okay, there's movies. There's one movie that I talked about this year that takes a gay issue in a very serious and is very well done and done respectfully and makes you care about it. This is not it. Okay, this is awful. It's a piece of shit. It's ridiculous. It's Oscar bait. Fuck it. I hate the Danish Girl. Get this fucking movie out of here. Again, it's something I watched, so you don't have to. The Danish Girl.
Well, now you know
how I feel. One of the worst movies of the year. And then the worst movie of the year.
Oh, God.
Wait. That I saw.
Okay. I have one, too. But
Well, you can go. You, all right,
no,
you
no,
go.
No. You, okay. You go ahead.
I talked about it on the show before, so it might not surprise everybody, but I saw a movie at the drive-in. It was in a double feature with Trainwreck. For some reason, I decided I could get through this. The Gallows was the name of it. It's a found footage horror movie starring Cassidy Gifford, daughter of Kathy Lee Gifford. One of the worst movies you'll ever see. It takes place backstage at a play where 20 years ago, one of the actors was hung in the play on accident, which is funny because there's a real story that happened this week about a guy who was hung in a play. It wasn't supposed to be. And, of course, they're haunted by the ghost of that guy, and they're locked in a high school auditorium, and it's, like, footage from somebody's cell phone that they found, and it's completely awful. So, The Gallows...
Well, the last...
truly, truly, truly awful.
The last Paranormal Activity I saw...
Yes.
...was just hideous.
Yeah, this is worse than that.
This was, like, because they were, like... Hey, what if we had, like, Latino kids in the bar? Get possessed.
I think I've seen one Paranormal Activity, not the first one, but maybe the third one or something. But that was bad. This is worse. This is awful. Yeah. I mean, found footage alone can be annoying, but boy, when you... Oh, oy, oy, oy. So bad.
Oh, you know, a movie that didn't really work, but I thought was interesting, Inherent Vice.
Yeah, I didn't see that. That was last year.
Was that last year?
That was 2014.
Was that count as 2015?
No, it was 2014.
Came out in 2014?
Movie, yeah.
All right. It came out. It was released.
You would have seen it this year,
but... It was kind of released in January.
It was last year. Right. It was for Oscar consideration last year, and it was...
Well, there was a film called Hot Pursuit with Reese Witherspoon and Sofia Vergara.
Did you see it?
I did.
Oh, fuck.
That was... You know what? That was the second feature we saw at the drive-in after... After
Mad Max. Oh, God.
Boy, is that fuck. Because there's nothing worse than a bad comedy that just doesn't work. Yeah. And there's not any chemistry or any comedy at all.
Apparently, those two hate each other, is what I've read.
Yeah, and you
after
could see
doing
it
that movie.
You could see it in the movie.
Yeah.
And the number one, to me, the worst piece of shit that I saw. Yeah. And I didn't see it in the theater. I saw it on HBO.
Yeah.
Or at least I watched some of it until I could not puke. Entourage.
Oh, God.
Why
I did
in
not
the
see
love
Entourage.
Of all that's holy?
Even people who like that series
did
didn't
they
like
subject
Entourage.
Us to a fuck? Hey, Turtle's rich now.
Yeah.
He's like a fucking magnate from the shoe industry. Like, who cares about this garbage? Who wants to watch this bullshit? It is just the most like, hey guys, planes. We got hot bitches. Woo! Yeah. It's so sophomoric and so up his own ass. It's so disgusting and gross, and I'm saying this as a dude. It made me hate other men. It is really just awful.
Yeah, no,
just dumb garbage.
I hear you. I you know I put this out to social media. Give us your best worst movies.
Yeah, yeah.
Give us your. Did you get some? I got
some
responses.
Sure.
Let me read some responses. Paul Pepitone, best movie, The Martian. That's a guy we do comedy with. Paul, Amy Probst, another comic, says. The worst was Leonardo DiCaprio's drop of wiggling snot at the end of The Revenant, earning him an Oscar nomination. I disagree with that. Like I said, that was good. Mm-hmm. My cousin Adrian says Sylvester Stallone deserves to win for Best Supporting Actor. Well, I disagree. But,
looking out for the guineas.
Well, look,
I see how
he's an eye tie.
There you go.
My cousin Adriano D'Angelo enjoyed
sure.
that. Victoria Mansberger.
La Familia.
Who I like. I like Victoria. I think she doesn't like. She said, still mad about Fury Road. I guess she didn't like that. I don't know.
Well, sorry.
It was feminist, mm-hmm. Victoria. I disagree. But anyway. Stacy Molinaro says, Concussion was good. The Reverend was overrated. And Hateful Eight was good.
All
so
right.
She didn't like
there
that. And then I've got Spotlight was a journalist's dream movie.
Mm-hmm.
It was by far the best movie I've seen in a long time. It's up for an Oscar. So there you go. She liked that. Melanie Hurt says, Straight Out of Compton, best movie.
Okay.
Which, okay. That's what I got. So any, what
I got
did,
my friends Sean Sean Stone and Joel Hurst, who worked at the legendary Thomas Video, which was one of the oldest running, longest running video stores till last year. So guys who know movies, both picked Mad Max Fury Road.
As best movie. Okay,
although
sure.
Joel said Pixels was the worst.
You know what? If I would have seen Pixels, I might have known.
Yeah.
I was curious to see Pixels because I thought the visuals looked cool, but no, it was...
Our friend Scott Parrish also liked What We Do in the Shadows.
Yeah.
He enjoyed Star Wars.
Yeah.
And he also said he liked Peanuts.
I didn't see Peanuts. I would have liked to have seen Peanuts, but I didn't see it.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
So, you know...
I got one more that I found on the... Adrian Johnston says,
yes.
The best documentary was The Wolfpack. I don't even know what that was. What was that about?
The Wolfpack's a weird movie about these guys who grew up together in a neighbor... It's a documentary. It's interesting.
Okay, I didn't see that. And the worst was Soaked in Bleach, and I actually agree. That was terrible. That's about the conspiracy to murder
Kurt
Cobain.
Well, there's two Kurt and Courtney movies.
Yeah. The other one was good, I thought...
Montage of Heck
was good. That was on HBO. And I didn't like Soaked in Bleach either. It was stupid.
Well, there you go. All right, I'm tired of movies.
I am too, but boy, we covered them all, baby. We didn't leave any nothing left to
I think we left to turn. I think we're all good.
But boy, I mean, what a great we got lots of suggestions if you're looking for a movie to watch.
Sure.
And you want to do the actual Oscar picks here before we go, just in the main categories?
Geez.
I mean, for Best Picture, The Big Short, Bridge of Spies, Brooklyn, Mad Max, Martian, Revenant, Room, and Spotlight. I would probably, if I had to pick one, I guess I picked Mad Max Fury Road as the best movie. I would be fine if Spotlight won,
yeah.
And I think I'd be fine if Revenant won.
I would say Spotlight should win, and The Revenant will win.
And The Revenant probably will win. Actor in a leading role, Cranston in Trumbo, Damon in The Martian, Leo in Revenant, Fassbender for Steve Jobs, and Eddie Redmayne in The Danish Girl, which can go fuck itself. That's me adding in that last bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Leo should win and probably will win. So
I would say Cranston should win because he's awesome.
But
probably Leo's going to win. Or Damon.
Damon's great.
Because The Martian made a lot of money, so they could throw it.
And Damon's the only guy on screen for a lot of that movie, and he's great in it.
They all love him.
Okay, for actress in a leading role, Kate Blanchett in Carol, Brie Larson for Room, Jennifer Lawrence in Joy, Charlotte Rampling for 45 Years, and Saoirse Ronan for Brooklyn. I believe Brie Larson has the inside line, and I'm fine with that.
I like that, too.
I liked her.
Brie
Larson's good in that.
Terrific in that.
She's good in that. All the other actresses were good, so I don't have a beef with any of them. Actor in a supporting role, Christian Bale for Big Short, Tom Hardy for Revenant, Mark Ruffalo for Spotlight, Mark Rylance for Bridge of Spies, and Stallone for Creed. Now, Idris Elba won the SAG Award in this category, and he's not in, and Stallone won the Golden Globe. I don't think Stallone's going to win this. I don't think the Academy likes him as much as the foreign press does. So I guess I'm going to go with Ruffalo to win, right?
I mean, he kind of carries it. I'd be okay
movie.
With that. I don't know.
He kind of carries it.
I don't know if Christian Bale's going to really.
I might vote for Mark Rylance for Bridge of Spies.
Yeah.
He was completely convincing.
It was very good.
No acting there. You can't even see the acting in Mark Rylance. He's so good in that. So it was good. And again, Tom Hardy, I thought, overdid it in that. For actress in a supporting role, Jennifer Jason Leigh for Hateful Eight, Rooney Mara for Carol, Rachel McAdams for Spotlight, Alicia Vikander for The Danish Girl, and Kate Winslet for Steve Jobs. I believe Alicia Vikander won the SAG Award, so she's probably the front runner. I mean, does Jennifer Jason Leigh have a shot? I mean,
nah.
How many guys vomit in her face? Do you win an award?
I mean,
after
everybody
that?
Loves Kate Winslet, but I don't think this movie.
No, that movie's not great for her. Rachel McAdams is fine, but I didn't get
she's not
that
the
vibe.
Corner. She's not the core of that movie.
No, I think I'm fine with Alicia Vikander, even though I hated that movie, and that's probably because I liked her in Ex Machina. I don't know.
She should have been nominated for Ex Machina.
Yeah, and then going through, you know, for directing, I guess whatever wins for picture probably wins there, so it's probably Revenant. For documentary feature, look, I had Winter on Fire was the only one of the five. It was What Happened, Miss Simone, Look of Silence, Cartel Land, and Amy. I would go with Winter on Fire if you didn't see those. Who would know?
Chances are you didn't see those.
Well, I did, and they were good. Just going through Earned It was probably the best song. That's the Weeknd song from 50 Shades of Grey, which if I would have seen that movie, I might have put that on my worst, but I didn't.
But you saw 50 Shades of Black from Marlon Wayans.
That I have not seen.
Sure you saw that wonderful
I will
film.
Not be seeing that.
Oh, God.
And then any other categories you care about?
Nah,
here?
I'm good.
All right, let's get out of here. Joel Radio, lots of good movies to see. I mean, so many of those on Netflix, so many on HBO. Good documentaries. An Honest Liar, you might have not seen.
No, they're going to go see Minions again.
Minions wasn't terrible.
It was horrible.
It was not great. It wasn't terrible.
Only 6-year-olds and 70-year-olds liked that movie.
Yeah, probably. Anyway, let's get out of here. Joel Radio, another year in movies. I probably don't want to see another movie for a very long time at this point after all this.
Well, you did put yourself through the grinder.
I put myself through a marathon of movies.
And God knows I have too.
And
you can tell by my svelte physique.
Well, that's the other thing. I'm sick as a dog with a cold. I've probably gained 20 pounds since the first of the year. I need to stop watching movies and go to the gym. So that's my goal for the next couple weeks anyway. You know, not only did I watch 28 movies since Christmas, I watched all of Making a Murderer. I took 2 road trips to see Bruce Springsteen for 3 days each. I lived a lot of life.
All right.
On the silver screen. So thanks for listening to Joel Radio. Thanks to those who sent in their suggestions.
Yeah, thanks, everybody.
Their best thing. That was nice. And we'll catch you on the next one. Go watch the movies.
All right.
Go watch The People versus O.J. Simpson. American Crime Story. That's good. It's on FX.
That's pretty ridiculous.
I
like it.
Good night, everybody.
OJ did it.
Sure did.
Cam Newton lost. Marco Rubio's a robot.
Hey. See ya.